Steve, thanks so much. Happy 2016 to everybody. We're looking forward to an amazing year. It's me, Bill F. It's her, Wendy Snyder. You already know Steve. Hi, Wendy. How are you?
Hi, Bill. I
missed
haven't
you.
Seen
it's been
you.
A long time.
I've missed
it's been
you
a
as
long,
well.
Long time.
And Steve, I miss Steve.
Yep.
He was off.
I know. It's been, I think I was away longer over the holidays than I've been away in years.
You took nearly 2 weeks off, didn't you?
I had worked a couple days of the Christmas week, but I was off that whole week and then last week. And it's just kind of weird the way the calendar worked.
Right, right.
I liked it.
Did well, you? You were off for 2 weeks.
Well, I came back that Wednesday to do a show with my husband.
Oh, that's right.
So I got to see Kevin, and it was nice to see you, Kevin. It's nicer to see you now that the whole band's back together.
Oh, yeah, feels good.
Wasn't it a little weird, though, by Saturday and Sunday? You're like, it's completely out of any rhythm, you know? I couldn't figure out how to get back to work. And
well, there's something to be said for having a routine of some sort.
Yes, I need that.
And
I need to get out of the house.
Is that
I'm
what it
telling
is?
You,
to come down
I was
to that?
Glad to come back
yeah.
to work.
Yeah.
But yes, the routine.
I've heard doctors explain that if you're ever off for a week or more than a week at a time, then you really should start to build some sort of a routine. You don't want to wake up at different times every day. But that's the beauty of being off for a week or so is there were days I got up at 7 a.m. The other day I got up at 11:30 a.m., which felt so good.
I know. And I'll tell you, my husband was doing a lot of freelance work over the whole Christmas break.
Yeah.
So he's been getting up at like 7:30 and getting to work in the basement doing, you know, audio production.
Yeah.
And today is the first day that I got up to go to work and he gets to sleep in.
Oh.
So we're like tag team. Oh. We didn't even see each other this Christmas break.
That's not good, is it?
No.
It's not, no?
But, I mean, we saw each other, but not like to hang out and
right,
do
right,
stuff.
Right, 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 right.
Now they're going to go to Galloping Ghost and play video games. I said, why do you wait when till I'm back at
have
work?
Have all the fun when you're working? That's not fair.
I will not hog the Qbert game. I like Battlezone.
There's also something, and I have to admit, I took this for granted for way too long. The whole time the girls were growing up, there's four of us in the house, and if the four of us wanted to do something, like go out to dinner or shop or see a movie or whatever, we would just go and do it. But now with one of them away and the other one usually away, it's very hard to pull that off, and we got to do that a bunch over the last week or 10 days, and it was fantastic. Every single time, it's like, I miss this. I really miss the four of us just doing something together.
We are missing that a lot because, you know, Michael has a job at a local guitar store.
Yeah.
So he doesn't get home till like 8. So my family dinners that I push so hard to have happen.
Right.
Unless we eat at 8:30, which we've been kind of doing, but then that gets late on a school night.
It does. It does.
It's been nice during the break, but, you know, now it's back to business. Although I hope my kids didn't lie to me. They're not back at school today.
No, they still have a couple more days,
okay.
Right?
Well, you know, I realized as they both said that, they always fight, so I'm like, they couldn't be scheming together on anything. They just don't get along well.
But that would be the master plan, wouldn't it?
Well, that's why I didn't even check the school website.
No, I think you have a few more days.
So I know of a high schooler who went back to school today.
Yeah.
And, you know, being out of routine and everything, boom, 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 alarm goes off, gets up, he drives to school. And found out it was a late start.
Oh, great.
Oh, man.
That's perfect.
I feel so bad for him.
That's perfect.
But you laughed a little, didn't you, Steve?
No, I mean, yeah.
Now, can I, we were talking about this off air, so if you don't mind, a second or two on air. There's an extra person now living in our house for a short time. My daughter Reese, while she was away at the University of Dayton, has a boyfriend, Michael, who's an incredibly nice guy. I had never met him until the other day. But he's staying with us for a couple of days. And
did you get clearance to talk about this?
No.
Because they're old enough where you have to say, is it cool if I talk about this on the air?
I think if anyone involved in this was uncomfortable, they would have said to me,
not for air.
By the way, this part of our lives needs to remain private. But it's a weird dynamic. And this is the first time that this has happened, that one of my daughters has a boyfriend who lives out of town who's in Chicago to visit her.
Awkward.
And now staying with us. It, you know, it is and it isn't. He's a really, really nice guy. He's a lot of fun.
Doesn't matter. That's your daughter.
It's just still kind of strange to all of a sudden have
another person there.
Any other person there, but especially a person who has fixins on my daughter.
God, I don't want
the people from the swamplands.
It's like chili fixings.
Yeah, it's similar, Steve. It's very, very similar. It's just, it's really
different.
You know, yeah,
it sucks different. Being a grown up, doesn't it, Bill? Wasn't it easier when we were little and we didn't have to worry about being responsible for these kids that we've given birth to?
Yes.
And now it's like they have a significant other that's there, and you have to deal. I just don't want to grow up.
He's staying downstairs. He's staying in the living room. And we've got him on 24-hour watch to make sure that he does not leave the living room.
Do you have an invisible fence?
An ankle bracelet with connected to a chain.
One of my friend Ryan, who I play tennis with, said, you want to screw with him? He goes, just sit there and watch him all the time. I go, like what? He goes, just like when he wakes up, just be sitting on the couch, just watching him. I can't do that.
You did it for a minute.
I thought about
you?
It. Oh, yeah, okay. I considered it for a little while.
It's just weird. And whether he's nice or not, it's still just, it changes the dynamic.
He is such a nice guy. You almost, I know this will sound awful. You almost want to find something that you can go, well, I like him except for this, but he doesn't have, there's no,
well, he's on his
that.
Best behavior too, Bill, because he's staying at.
I think that could be part of it.
Just
I
wait.
I think that could be part of it. So the strangest part is, I already started to tell you, Wendy, I did not tell you, Steve. When we found out he'd be coming and staying, not just for a day, but for 3 days, and he was going to stay with us, it was suggested by my daughter that he could stay in her room, that they could blow up an air mattress and he could sleep on the floor.
Be more convenient for everyone.
It'd be more convenient for everybody.
It's got to be awkward for you getting up in the morning and he's still right. sleeping there.
Well, guess how long it took the Senate to vote that bill down?
A second?
About a second. Just under a second. Yep.
Kudos to her for asking.
She's a very thoughtful girl.
I give her credit.
I'm
know this will sound strange, but I give her credit for even... Because I put myself in... I was 19-year-old me for a second trying to think of how I would word that with my own parents. And I don't think I could have said it without just falling down on the floor and having a seizure. I don't think I could have pulled that off.
I wouldn't have asked. I would have just, you know, always better to ask for forgiveness than permission. So
true.
I would have just done it and then had my mom come in and go,
this isn't happening.
Me?
Yeah. No, we had a very, very, what I consider to be successful discussion about this where I said, I give you credit for asking and for pleading your point. But it's just not a good idea. And
is that how you said it?
I said it with slightly more pointed words, maybe. But
not a good idea.
It's not the best idea. But I, to her point, I understand in theory how that could have worked. He could just sleep there on the air mattress on the floor. But I was a 19-year-old guy at some point a couple years ago.
And it's your house.
Right, except
you make the rules.
The two of them were dating where? 3 states away?
Yeah.
Right.
I know.
What happens in Dayton stays in Dayton.
That's what they always say. Yeah.
I mean, and that's a problem, you know, that I can't wait to see because my kids haven't gone to school yet. But when they come home, they've had their freedom.
Right.
But it's still your house.
That's one of the points that I made, and I think fairly successfully, because she understood. She got it. So when I come home today and she's run off to marry him, I guess I'll pin it back to that. All right, let's take a break. We have a big show for you. It's Bill F. Wendy Snyder on WGN. How did the gift giving go over? Everybody got what they wanted for the most part? Did you?
You know what? I scored big time this
did
year.
You?
You know, I'm a very... bad gift receiver.
Because why? Why do you say that?
I just am way too honest.
Yeah.
And last year it was I needed a new walk, and so we have 3 lists that we have to give out: one to my family, one to Jim's family, and then one to our household. So I put my walk on the list for Jim's mom.
Sure.
So when we opened gifts on Christmas Eve, I said, oh, honey, a walk. Great. Except I already asked your mom for one.
Oh, you got to specialize and know who's getting who what.
I just can't.
You can't for just a couple of minutes just not say that.
Right, just a quick acknowledgement of what a great gift it is, and then behind the scenes do the jockeying.
I know. I'm terrible. I'm
no tact?
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm
come
tactless.
On. You know, the excitement of getting a new walk, you lose all control. Nobody knows what to do. We've all experienced that.
Everyone wants to be the one to give the walk.
Right. That's the premier spot to be in.
I know. And so this year, Jim and the boys pooled their efforts, mainly Jim.
Yeah.
And got me
me something.
What'd you
I
get?
I am so excited about.
What is this?
I got an iPad.
Oh, look at that.
And I know you and Steve and I, we were all talking about this. Does any of us have an iPad?
Mm-hmm.
And we all said no. And I said, you know, why would I need one? Oh, I need one.
Explain well, to those perfect, of us who do not have one, because if somebody gave me one, I swear to you, I wouldn't know what to do with it. What are you doing with it that you couldn't do before?
Everything that I have, and no one warned me about this when I became a mother.
Yeah.
Everything that I have becomes everyone else's. Like my computer, I never get to use.
It becomes the family computer.
Yeah, it's like, why are you on your computer, my computer? You have your own. Oh, yours was here.
Sure.
And then everything gets messed up in the settings. So I was given this, and I was told that I can put my fingerprint on here or my code, and no one can use it.
Yeah.
I haven't done that, of course. So Dylan's like, hey, Mom, can I use your iPad? And I said, no. And he goes, just testing you.
Oh, very strong.
But I know, at the minute I leave it down there. But I can do anything that I want to do.
My fear, though, is now you're going to be playing Candy Crush while you're driving. That's my fear
She says that she can do anything she wants to do.
Look at how big Candy Crush is.
I know.
What she means is play
God.
Candy Crush.
Right, well, exactly.
If Jim thought he lost me before... Look at how
I'm just glad you still remember his name.
Look at.
All right. It's like watching it at a drive-in movie theater now.
All right.
How big Candy Crush is for you.
Do you know what else I watched on it? I mean, I sat here and watched American Horror Story,
Which year?
The one where the institution. I can't think of what it was. Asylum.
Insane Asylum. Right,
just Asylum. Yeah. Oh, my God. I laid on the couch. I cooked. Then I took a little break and watched a couple episodes. I can watch whatever I want. Now I'm watching Mindy Kaling.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Mindy Project.
Yeah. Right.
I never had time. They always had the TV on.
Didn't you have a laptop before?
Yes, but I'm telling
you. Everybody else is using it?
Yeah, and all the settings are so messed up that I can't even get on it.
One of the problems I have with it is, aside from the fact that you will now have no contact at all with your family.
Thank you, Jim.
You like that? All right.
Maybe he did it on purpose.
It's that I love watching movies on really big screens. Like theater would be optimal for me, but the big screen at home is like we have smaller television in the house. I won't watch a movie on our bedroom television. It has to be on the widescreen in the living room. My daughter watches them on a calculator. She'll watch a movie on a calculator. So don't you feel like you're missing anything? You don't?
No, because I'm by myself. I get to do it.
Oh, I guess.
I can choose anything off of Hulu or Netflix. I'm going to cancel my cable.
Yeah.
Because really, with all those things, you don't need much else.
You have this now.
Have you had the moment yet where you're watching Netflix in bed and then you kind of fall asleep and it falls and smacks you in the face?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's fun.
It was fun. It was fun. I just need my own time. I need something for
me. No, I understand. And now you have that.
I love it.
And was that the primary gift this year?
This was
the
it. Because this
got?
Is, yeah, this is probably too much money.
That's a pretty nice gift.
So, and if we shared accounts, I would know it was, you know, coming. Because I could see that.
Oh, true.
So good thing we have separate accounts.
Steve?
So I guess, do you have a separate cell now bill for that?
What?
If it's wireless, are you playing it out using cellular technology? Or
no, mine is Wi-Fi only.
Okay. Yeah.
Which was a couple $100 cheaper, and I have to be honest with you, there are ways around it. And really, everywhere you go has Wi-Fi. I can get phone calls on this thing, which I didn't know. Somebody texted me, and it came up on here, and I also have a hotspot with my...
That's personal. I don't think you need to share
right
that with
away.
Us.
First.
Come on. Let's make that our New Year's resolution. Some things need to be kept private.
How about giving us a little gift, huh?
An AT&T hotspot, guys, where I can
call
make
it,
this.
I'm glad you got it sponsored. Right. You feel better about yourself?
Oh, I can't believe the billboard fit.
So I can make this, like, I can hook it up to my 4G or whatever phone.
You're only making it worse.
I gotta go.
Keep going.
I'm
no,
on break.
Right.
I'm gonna go play with my
don't,
iPad.
Don't. Come on. It's the holidays. Well, that was a very thoughtful gift, and you had no idea this was coming.
I had no idea. In fact, he on his mom's list, he put like a little Amazon Kindle, the Fire Kindle or whatever.
Just to throw you off the scent.
No, that's what he wanted. So when he got that from his mom, I said... I didn't know you wanted that. Oh, it's only $50. I think I want to go get one of those. So he was just sitting pretty knowing that the next day I was going to open this up.
Masterful.
It worked.
That's excellent.
I mean, it was a great score. And, yep, I've been spending a lot of downtime.
That's so nice. That's so nice.
I love it.
My primary gift has not come yet.
What does that mean?
When I was in Disneyland, you know, I took Kylie to see schools in California a few weeks ago, and we went to Disneyland, and there was...
Is that where she was looking?
No, she's looking at Chapman, which is 15 minutes from Disneyland. Because I said to her, pick any school you want, but make sure it's within 15 minutes of Disneyland. So that was the closest. So there's this artist whose work I've enjoyed for years, and his name is Shag, and he does pop art that looks like the beginning of Mad Men. It looks like it's from the 60s. It's really dated. And he does prints of the Beatles and of just all kinds of pop culture things. Well, he did a series of Disneyland pictures, and there's one in particular that I loved, but they don't do any mail order out of Disneyland. You have to buy it. And when I was there, Kylie said, you can't buy this. You can't carry that on the plane. There's no way. So then I opened up a gift, and it was, they have somehow made arrangements for that print to be sent to me, but they said it'll take 3 weeks.
Well, that's okay. You know it's coming.
I know.
That's
I
awesome.
Can't wait, but that was I thought that was a really thoughtful, nice gift, and some other littler things too. But that was my primary one.
Well, my New Year's resolution was to be more patient, which I've already broken, and to be kinder to people.
I
just tell you, on New Year's Day, as I mentioned, Jim was doing a lot of audio editing in his makeshift office in the basement, and has been working nonstop. So I said, honey, why don't I get you a massage for all the things that you've just been sitting here editing and hanging over your computer? Why don't I treat you to a massage?
Nice gift. From you or
yeah.
from... Yeah? That's a very nice gift.
And he's, you know, and then I tried for 3 days to get him scheduled for a massage, and they're booked at the Massage Envy near us. And I said, I doubt they give you a happy ending. I'm not sure.
But, when I said from you, I meant from you giving the massage, not from you setting it up.
No.
So you're setting up a professional one.
I thought he deserved
massage.
It. Go right back to an iPad discussion there or something.
Me too. Me too. Well, that's a great gift. It just hasn't happened yet.
I just haven't been able to get him on the schedule yet.
He'll figure it out.
And then, you know, all these questions. Do you want a guy or a girl? He goes, I don't know. I've never really...
He knows. He said he didn't know. Get him a guy one and see how disappointed he is at the end of that massage. Go ahead. See what happens.
And there's 5 different things. Do you want deep tissue? Do you want trigger point? I don't even know what any of these things are. So it's really hard. I finally just sent his email and phone number and said, just call him and he can schedule it, but I'm paying for it.
Trigger point? Is he getting a massage from the rifleman? Who's giving him a massage? What's trigger point?
I don't know. It's part of the options.
All right.
Someone will know.
I've never heard of that.
See, I'm trying to keep it clean. And
yeah,
you,
of course.
You and Bertrand are
one talking dirty. We're just pointing it out.
Right. That's our job.
We're not doing anything.
Nice deviant laughter there.
Then I got my...
All right,
you know. All right. A quick break. Some news. More show coming your way. It's us, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Happy 2016.
When you were a kid and you heard that year, now put yourself back in like grade school and somebody goes, this in 2016, you think it's the future, don't you? Don't you go, wow, it's like Buck Rogers time.
I thought we'd all be wearing silver outfits, much like Jim Peterick wears sometimes on stage.
Yeah, Jim Peterick is from the future. He wears the bright silver metallic outfit. Right.
By the gods of rock and roll.
Right.
To warn us.
Right, of impending doom in the future.
But
yes,
I did.
Has.
I thought, you know, we talk about this frequently, but that picture we saw in like Life magazine or something with the walking sidewalks and
flying cars.
Very Jetsons-esque, but not in a cartoon form.
But that's what we thought the whole 2000s would look like. And it really doesn't.
It looks the same. And in fact, did you read 1984 when you were in high school before it was 1984?
George Orwell's 1984, yeah.
Because that was bizarre to me. It's like, oh my God, we're reading something that hasn't happened yet.
Except some people, and I think this is partially true, have made the comparisons of their version of Big Brother and the fact that there are surveillance cameras kind of everywhere. So to some extent, not to great extent, but to some extent, 1984 has kind of come true.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
But you didn't think, it was just weird. I graduated in 81 and,
right.
and you're reading the book and you're like, oh my God, this is so in the future. Couldn't even really fathom the 2000s.
Right, Right.
That was just too far away. I thought, I'm not going to be alive in the 2000s. It sounds so far away.
Well, just seeing that date, I'm trying to remember where I saw it the other day, but I like it, there's no shock value to seeing that number. Like when you were a kid, you'd see that number and you go, oh my God, that's a million years in the future. I wonder if men will even still be on the planet in 2016.
Martians will have invaded by
then.
Right.
We don't stand a chance of being around in 2016. But here we are, and it kind of looks like it did when we were kids. I mean, things have been updated a little bit, but it's not like a whole new universe, is it?
No.
Yes.
It is? Is it?
I'm looking out on Michigan Avenue. These buildings were pretty much here.
Yeah.
It's not all space age, and the sidewalks aren't moving.
What did you get for Christmas, Wendy, and what can you do on it?
Well, there's that. There
is technology, of
course. The availability of technology has certainly come leaps and bounds, but...
I could have had a flip phone in the 80s this size.
Right.
It was an iPad.
Right, you could have. But think about like what you just got for a gift, that tablet. Think about if you had one. I mean, I know this is impossible, but if you had one when you were a kid, first of all, they would have killed you because they thought you were a witch.
Right.
Who had time travel ability. But like nobody could have conceived that what you're holding, the information that you're holding at the palm of your hand, would happen at this point, right?
When I was a freshman in college, one of my professors said, one day, and this was in the early 80s, one day computers will be small enough for you to take them on the bus. And everybody laughed.
Really?
Everybody in the room laughed.
And see, that is the difference. Like Steve said, don't you have a laptop or a computer? And yes, I do. And it's a small laptop, but this is, I mean, really,
right,
this
I
is
know.
Just, I can, not that I ever go on the bus.
But if you went on the bus, that would be the one to bring.
And you just, you know, prop it up and watch a movie.
Right. It's
next
just
year,
that simple.
Next year you ask for a Ventra card just so you can go on the bus and play Candy Crush.
Right.
I wish, which one would be cheaper?
That's a good question. In my high school, there was a group called the Computer Club, and they had access to our school's computer, which was the size of a broom closet, the computer was.
Yes.
And they would go in and they would play games on these little cards, and it was just a number.
Punch cards?
Yeah, like on punch cards. Did you have the same thing?
Yeah, but the computer was the size of a whole classroom. It wasn't just a broom closet.
Ours was... Boy, I don't know the exact dimensions, but about...
It was big.
It was big. And there was a very select group of kids that understood what the computer would do and to use it for good, not for evil. And they were allowed in this group. And then they would show me the games that they would play. And I go, I can't believe you waste 3 hours a day playing that. Really?
Oh, Star and you make Blaster? Fun of me for
well,
Candy Crush?
It was so primitive. Everything about it was so primitive. But I didn't think at that stage when computers were that big and really didn't do much, I didn't think that in 2016 we would have the availability that we have now. Everybody always says that on your smartphone, for people who have smartphones, you have more information there on your smartphone than NASA had in their computer bank when men landed on the moon. That's how far we've come in a short span of time.
That is totally freaky. What did the computer kids call themselves, the club?
Well, they called themselves the cool kids, but we had other names for them.
Because there's a group of kids that are in our neighborhood who I guess are very good at computers.
Yeah.
And they call themselves the nerd herd.
Oh, they do?
Yes.
Well, they have a good sense of humor about
yeah.
it. All right, so with all this technology, why can't Chicago produce a good New Year's Eve television show?
And what's with the name?
Chi-Town
Rising. Is
Chi-Town
that a throwback
Rising.
To Mr. Mojo Rising, which was, what is it called? When you take all the letters, not a palindrome.
An acronym?
Yes.
An acronym, yeah.
For Jim Morrison. If you take Jim Morrison, it's spelled,
oh.
you can put Mr. Mojo Rising. This is Chi-Town Rising. What does that mean?
Channel, what, Steve, you know?
I was watching, I didn't think it was, I wasn't listening to it, but it was on the screen. Looked like they didn't want to show the crowd because I think there probably weren't many people there. But
it was cold.
Well, they were going to charge people to watch the fireworks was their goal, which I don't think you can do. You can't just have cops walking around going, ah, are you looking up at fireworks?
No,
sir, $8. Give me $8.
My
I saw
eyes
you
are
looking,
down here.
No, I saw you looking at the fireworks. I want $8.
But it's a great idea, isn't it? I mean, because after New York, you know, most of the country is still going to celebrate New Year's
true.
Eve.
True. Very
and this
true.
This was played in several markets around the country.
Steve, it's
Chicago
a great idea.
People.
That's part of the problem. Except that when they do that, like Channel 7, with all due respect to Mark Giangreco, who I love, and Janet Davies, who I love, that show's not good.
Well, don't get them. They're already busy doing something. This is another network.
Oh, no. I think the point of this was, and unless I'm wrong, was this was supposed to be a regional a national
thing.
So
then
Mario Lopez got the call.
You know, he appeals to people in Dallas more than Gene Greco does.
I guess so. And then at Channel 7, they decided, they go, we got to really boost this up. We've had Mark Gian Greco and we've had Janet Davies. We got to get the kids from Windy City Live on. That'll make a show a complete show. And it was a complete something, but it was not a complete show.
Who watches that stuff?
I get so mad at myself because every year I say...
tune in?
It's Terry and I, and we always get movies. We rent movies. And then for some reason, we're always between movies right around midnight. So she goes, well, let's just watch it for a couple of minutes. And I just, I marvel at how bad. I was
You're
going to
go blind.
I know I am. there's no doubt about it. I'm going to go blind. I was testing out Seeing Eye Dogs as I was watching these two shows. I'm flipping back and forth between Channel 5 and Channel 7 going, no, that's the worst one. No, that one's worse. Hold on, let me try. Nope, that one's worse. Back and forth, back and forth.
Well, ours is worse in a better way. It's ours. It's ours.
It's, our
it's
bad.
Local.
It's and our it, worst.
Yes, and there's no Chi-Town listed anywhere.
No one says Chi-Town. That. There's not a single person who lives in this city that calls this city Chi-Town. Nobody. Nobody. Not like think of your jiviest people who live in the city.
Huggy Bear.
Huggy Bear. Have you ever heard Huggy Bear call this Chi-Town? It's
give me some skin. He'll say that.
He'll say that.
But
why
didn't
they call it
gonna...
Give It Some Skin 2016? I would have watched that. I get so mad. Like I'm watching going, they know that this is coming New Year's Eve. It happens the same time every year. Why don't they plan something and make it entertaining? Why don't they do a year in review of all the crazy things that have happened in this city or nationally? Why don't they do that?
Why don't you pitch them? Will you host it?
Yes. I don't know if I want to
do that. In your Indian garb, your Native American garb?
Yes. I will dress like a Cherokee Indian if that's what they want me to do. I would be happy to do that. But you know what I mean? Wouldn't that be a better thing? Like, hey, a lot has happened in 2015. Let's take a look at some of the top stories. Like I said, locally, nationally, you name it. Bring in a couple of guest stars if you want. That's a show.
Now, I didn't see it, but I was reading about it, and I don't remember where I read this, but they had a star that represented one of the stars from the Chicago flag that came down.
No, it didn't come down.
But it was supposed to?
No, like for the
it went up.
For the 2 minutes before it was the stroke of midnight, the star is slowly going up, and we can see it here from our studio. I've been watching them work on this thing for 3 weeks, so it's slowly ascending, and I said to Terry... That's the star. That's the one across the street. So I said to Terry, if they're going to do something big at midnight, they better get that thing up there quick because it's got to go up there and then fireworks have to come out of it and then it has to, you know, fall toward the earth like it's supposed to. It's just slowly going up. And then at midnight, it's at the top and that's it.
There were no sparks or anything?
Nothing.
No, I really disagree with you, Bill. I thought it was pretty cool.
Did you?
Yeah, why not? I mean, what else?
I also heard that they had to stop the band Chicago from playing in order to go to the footage of the star.
Well, they were mid-song. The band Chicago was mid-song.
Well, plan this on December 29th, this whole thing?
You guys, this is what Chicago does.
What?
And we just rip on ourselves all the time.
Because it's not, like, when you see any of the stuff that, I hate to say this, but the stuff that New York does, they do it all the way. I mean, they really do it up big.
How many years have they been doing that? They got a lot of practice. Did you ever see their first show?
No, I didn't see their first show.
Although Dick Clark was there and he made it good.
Dick Clark made it good.
It was theater, though, their first show. It was before TV, so.
Right. Right. Right.
I thought the fireworks looked really cool.
The fireworks look good. Did they charge you to watch them? Because that was
Were you down here?
They went to Steve's house and they go, give me $8. I know you're watching it on TV.
We were at a party and at midnight. I said, hey, you know, they're doing this new thing.
Chi-Town rising, baby.
And I don't know. I thought it looked pretty, you know, I thought it was a nice start.
The fireworks part did look good. I will give you that. I wish that there was more to it. And then like on CNN, they've got Kathy Griffin and
Anderson Cooper.
Anderson Cooper. And I like that. That's really funny. That's really funny.
What are they doing, stand-up?
They're just kind of commenting on the festivities of what's going on there. And then they'll rip on, because they always pull out, for some reason, Carson Daly's always hosting one of these things, and Ryan Seacrest. And those guys, that's just like having vanilla ice cream. That's all that is. So they're ripping on those guys.
Right.
Oh, they were?
Yeah.
Anderson Cooper is ripping on vanilla ice cream.
No, but he's got a lot more to him than those guys. Don't you think, Steve?
I don't know.
I'm not crazy about any of them.
Oh, it's really funny. It really is funny.
Kathy Griffin doesn't even look like Kathy Griffin anymore.
She may have had something.
And I don't care. That's fine. It's just she doesn't look like herself.
She may have had a little work done. I don't know. But at least that like tries to do something. Ours is just a bunch of shots of people drunk in bars. It just I want more, you know?
I don't want any of it. I never
you
put
stay
the,
away from it.
No, we have the Death Star blowing up. We count down, and so we get to miss all that.
It's a better move. I'm coming to your house next year.
10:02:47.
All right, I'm coming over.
That's when you start it.
I'm there.
It is Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to 2016, and the band is back together. We have been apart for quite some time. I missed you, little Billy.
Oh, right back at you.
It's fun to be back. And we're going to talk about a serious thing right now. We saw this article in the Red Eye, and it was talking about the DARE programs. Did your kids go through the DARE programs?
They had a similar program at their school. It was not DARE, but it was similar.
Because we have a bunch of T-shirts that the DARE program in our suburb did. And, you know, you wonder what they're being taught. I know my son Dylan recently went to the Robert Crown Center in Hinsdale to learn about drugs. Mm-hmm. And then I also know that when you and I have talked to Tim Ryan, Man in Recovery Foundation, you and I sit there and listen to him talk about heroin and addiction and things like that. And yeah. I swear I feel like an idiot. I don't know anything.
Right. Well,
it's like we're shocked. I thought you had to shoot it up. No, you don't shoot it up.
Right.
It's like parents are learning, and the DARE program, does it help? Does it do anything? There's a woman in the studio with us right now who's done a little research on this. She's the director of the Illinois Consortium on Drug Policy at Roosevelt University. Her name is Kathy Kane Willis. And Kathy, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on today.
We appreciate you being here.
Now, I saw you rolling your eyes and making comments and speaking with your eyes before we brought you on the air about we didn't know that we thought you only had to shoot up heroin. We find these things out, and my kids have gone through the DARE programs. Is it helpful?
Are DARE programs helpful? I guess the question, what do you mean by helpful? And I would say, are they effective?
Is it making kids realize that drugs are not a good route?
Well, I guess what is your goal? And so if your goal is to reduce drug use or to reduce the harms associated with drug use, I mean, a bad thing, yeah, I think we could probably all agree that we don't want young people using drugs. But is that bad thing, message communicating to children, what is it? Are they responding to that message? Or are they like, oh, all these things are bad. So if I drink alcohol, it's bad. If I use marijuana, but they don't have understanding of drug mixing. Do you know what I mean? The dangerous things that can really happen because they're not given the information.
But doesn't it, I know some parents would argue that that's too much information, and the more they know, the more they want to experiment. However, I think the more they know, the more they're willing to avoid it.
Well, so, I mean, I'm an educator. I come from it. I think that education is really important. And I think that, you know, some of you were saying that you didn't know very much about heroin, for example, that it could be snorted, that it could be smoked, that it can be used many different ways, right? So I think it's important that we are providing education for people, but I think we need to be telling the truth when we're providing that education. And I think that most people don't know anything about drugs and drug use.
You were explaining to Wendy and I how these programs have been, for the most part, deemed ineffective, that they have cut government funding to the DARE programs of late because they're just showing the numbers are not what they should be. What are they doing wrong? What should they do differently?
Well, I think... So...
you
there's
have a
so
lot of
much
venom
inside. I could say... when you talk to people, kids who've been through drug education programs, DARE programs, they don't really, it doesn't stick with them. It doesn't last with them, and it's not meaningful to them. A lot of, especially the DARE program with the police officer, like kids don't really want to learn about drugs from a cop.
No.
It's really, I mean,
why
I,
not,
call me,
though?
I mean, you know, what, but because it's, a cop is about, you know, enforcing the laws, not a health expert. And so people would rather, or young people would rather actually hear about the health aspects rather than having a cop come in and tell them what they know is illegal.
But a cop, what the police officers have done in the past is they come in and they tell horrific stories of things that they've experienced, saying, hey, we got a call. Sure. It was a kid who was your age, yep, couldn't breathe. They tell you the story. You would think those scare tactics would be effective.
So there's a really good review of scare tactics in the literature. Prevention First put out a paper on this, and actually fear-mongering, fear techniques don't work.
It doesn't work.
And so, I mean, yeah. So I think that's the problem. And when you make everything sort of the same, because sometimes this is what we hear when I do interviews with kids who have been in drug education programs, is they hear, you know, the worst story becomes the norm. So, okay, I'm not going to say that it's impossible for someone to drink alcohol, have risky sex, contract HIV, right?
Mm-hmm. What grade are they hearing this story?
Well, I mean, HIV is considered a risk factor for using alcohol and other drugs. I mean, HIV can be a consequence of it, but the reality is that most people are not going to contract HIV from using alcohol. Right. So when you make the most outrageous, the regular story, then you lose a lot of people because they're like, well, my friends drank and they didn't get HIV. They used a condom. I'm just trying to say that we sort of go either on the, this is the worst thing ever, and here's all the horrible things that can happen to you. You will lose your job. You will become homeless. You will contract HIV. And I mean, most kids have a friend who's using drugs, who has used drugs, and they don't see those consequences.
And I have younger kids that, you know, they come home and say, you know, so-and-so smokes pot. And I go, oh, really? I try not to overreact. I said, are you? No. I said, okay, good. You know, good decision. And I think the DARE programs with the police officers at a very young age might be a good idea. As Bill mentioned, you know, a police officer coming into the school, we're taught to respect the police. So if a police officer is explaining that these are bad things that could happen, for a very early introduction.
I think it depends on where you're from, whether you're taught to respect the police. I mean, we don't need to get into all of what's going on in Chicago, but, you know, for some folks, the police are actually not the messenger that you want in your life at all. And for young kids, really, when you talk about what do you remember from the DARE program? If they brought the dog in,
the
they
dog would not and remember the t-shirt.
Okay, well, the dog. And here's the thing about the DARE t-shirts is people wear them ironically. You know that, right? I mean, like, if you see a kid, a teenager wearing a DARE t-shirt or a young adult, they're wearing it because it's funny. You know,
I don't know.
I
wear all my clothes ironically, so you're talking to the wrong guy.
Walk around Wicker Park sometime and see all the DARE shirts. Most people that are, it's kitschy to use these items. And that's one of the dangers, I think, about not having realistic conversations about drugs. You give out a t-shirt, you give out a pencil that says, only losers use drugs. Do you know what kids do? They scratch off the only losers and make it into a tool that says use drugs, no. You know? And so I think that what we do instead of educating kids is we give them a lot of props and toys and ribbons and, you know, and free hamburgers if you wear the ribbon all week and, you know, and that's not drug education.
But doesn't it get them talking? Because I know with the DARE program, I know that has prompted a lot of conversations between my kids and me.
Okay. So, I mean, I think that most parents lack education around drug use, too. So they don't really know how to have the conversations. And so I think it's always good to have an open and honest relationship with your child, with the parents. The problem is, I fear that parents don't have the kind of tools and they don't know how to communicate and listen and wait for a right time to talk about it. And they might be very ignorant about drug use as well. For example, I've had people say to me, well, you know, if you say that heroin, you use it once, you're instantly addicted. That's not actually true. Some people do. But if you say that, everyone who tries heroin becomes an addict.
No.
And then you know, and you're in high school and you know somebody who's tried it and they haven't.
Right.
Then does the entire message
It's discredited.
It's discredited. Sure. So when you say that, when you say...
Because my kids asked me, my younger son's in seventh grade, and he said, will I die if I use heroin? I said, yes. Well, maybe not the first time, maybe not the eighth time, but if you do heroin, ultimately you will die.
Well, I mean, we're all going to die at some point.
Well,
I think
of
that's
course.
Spoiler alert. You got to say spoiler alert before you say stuff like that.
But what
do we say? What are you?
The chance of dying is a lot higher,
right,
for people who use heroin, who become addicted to heroin. About one out of four people who tries it becomes addicted. That's what I would say.
We were talking to Kathy Kane Willis, director of the Illinois Consortium on Drug Policy at Roosevelt University, and she did some research, which is how we heard about you in the Red Eye. Forget Dare, new drug addiction educators offer Just Say No, but not N-O, K-N-O-W, and you need to know more. What do you suggest in place of the Dare programs?
Well, I mean, as I said before, the DARE programs have been defunded by the state because of lack of efficacy. Now, that doesn't mean that the new DARE, it doesn't show more effectiveness, but these are very marginal differences. What do we need to do? We need to educate parents about what drugs look like. We need to what drug use looks like. People need to understand drugs better. And we need to have more of a collective conversation that isn't just about drugs are bad. We need to talk about what can happen when you use them, mm-hmm, and particularly drug mixing. So that's when I'm talking to teenagers, you know, the thing that worries me the most is alcohol and stimulants, for example, downers and alcohol, like Xanax and alcohol. Those things can actually kill you. And kids don't understand that. So when you say, you know, marijuana will lead to X, or that drug use leads to the most worst thing, but you're not specific about what those things look like and how it can happen, how you can die. Actually, most people who use heroin who die from an overdose do so in combination with other drugs. It's actually relatively rare to die from a heroin overdose just alone.
I don't know if that information is accurate, so I don't want to be putting that out there. That's your opinion.
Oh, no. You can look at the Cook County. I work on, this is one of the issues I work on. No, almost all heroin deaths are in combination with other drugs like benzodiazepines, depressants, alcohol. So it's a drug mixing creates a very lethal combination. And it could be depressants or stimulants also create a lethal drug combination. Not to say that you couldn't, but
right,
the majority of drug deaths are in combination with other drugs.
Wendy mentioned we have a frequent guest, Tim Ryan, comes on. He's got a program called A Man in Recovery, and he,
yes,
brings with him a man named Kyle, about 20 years old.
Uh-huh.
And Kyle tells the story about how his girlfriend died from heroin overdose.
Sure.
Three of his friends died, close friends died from heroin overdose. And when he tells the story, I always say to myself, if you're right in the middle of this and people all around you are dropping like flies from something like this, how do you not realize the cause and effect? Why aren't we figuring that out?
Well,
they do speak at schools, which to me is a more eye opener than the DARE program. Like looking at this 19-year-old kid who's had to lose all his friends to death or changing who he hangs with just to survive.
Absolutely. And the research we did with kids is they wanted to hear from people who were their age.
I would think.
That makes more sense.
But they would want drug education delivered in smaller groups so they can ask questions, maybe some gender, like boys in one room and
like
girls
the sex
in
ed classes.
Kind of. Because actually, you know, kids really do want the information. They're afraid to ask. It's delivered by people who aren't necessarily experts in, you know, in drugs. I mean, cops are experts in arresting people,
right,
for drugs, but that doesn't mean that they're experts in the physiological consequences, the psychosocial and physiological consequences of using drugs. And so, yeah, I think we say that we do a lot, but a lot of what we do is actually not things that if we were educating people, we wouldn't do them. We wouldn't just hand out a ribbon and be like, oh, this is your drug education here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I think about it, I think about, and this is not going to happen anytime quickly, but in Australia, for example, health is considered like you know, math, reading. It's a core subject, and they start drug education in kindergarten. And it's not don't do this, just say no. It's like safe make medication use, you know, what to do if you have a headache, like not necessarily taking Tylenol or, you know, those kinds of things. If I have a headache, am I hungry? Mm-hmm. Am I tired? And see, this to me is more appropriate and better drug education. And when we look at Portugal, when we're talking about drug education, we also have to remember when we're in this opioid epidemic with the pain pill problem is that there's a lot of people who are at risk of developing dependency. There could be targeted prevention materials for people who are prescribed opioids, you know, to lower the risk of them developing addiction. And I don't think that we're talking about these things in kind of a health way. We're kind of like a moral way. This is bad.
Right.
And I mean, I don't know that that's real effective with kids.
I just know I was a kid once. Surprise, surprise.
Long time ago.
And then even to this day, like if somebody tells me to do something, I'm kind of spiteful and I'll be like, okay, whatever. I'm going to do what I want. So there is a difference between saying to your kid, don't do drugs, or let's talk about it and find out. I understand your view. There are a lot of people who are saying you're throwing generalized topics out there and like your heroin deaths mixed with other things. It seems like it's a general statement. I feel like I'm being a little defensive to you, and I don't mean to be.
Oh, no.
I just want to help our kids out there.
People are very surprised about the heroin deaths in combination. That really is true. You can go look at the CDC. It's not something that I pulled out of my butt this morning. It really is a real thing. But when we're talking about drugs and drug use with young people, we're not talking about the combinations that really can result in death. And I think that's doing a huge disservice.
Sure.
Because we do know that kids do use drugs. We do know that.
It's scary when you think about the young ones that have already done drugs.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's scary. It's scary, but we also have to be checking in with ourselves and in with reality. If, you know, more than 45% of high school students have tried some kind of substance, then that means that 100% of people know someone who's tried a substance. And so we need to be not creating like a scare tactic around it or giving untruths or half truths, because you know what? You do lose all your credibility with young people.
We have got to take a quick break, and we are talking to Kathy Kane Willis, director of the Illinois Consortium on Drug Policy at Roosevelt University. The DARE program, not that it's bad, is it effective? Maybe Kathy, you can fill us in on some things we can do to get this covered a little better. 312-981-7200, Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. We have a couple of callers that want to jump in and talk to Kathy Kane Willis, director of the Illinois Consortium on Drug Policy at Roosevelt University. And we are just about out of time, so we got to be really quick here. And Ruth, you're going to have to put some headphones on, Kathy, if there are some over there. Ruth, you had a question or comment for our guest?
I think it's disappointing that the DARE program has been discontinued because, first of all, I understand that heroin has been quite... I knew a gal that lived in Wilmington, Illinois, and moved out of Wilmington because all the small-town white kids in Wilmington were using heroin. Now, there's quite a difference between heroin and buying a can of beer at Walmart. If I can't buy it at Walmart, then I shouldn't be using it. And I think that it's very important that the police should have been teaching this program and talking about the legal aspects as well as the dangerous aspects of heroin.
Thank you, Ruth, for your call.
One of the reasons why we sort of started embarking on looking at drug education and how kids perceived it was because there was absolutely no discussion about heroin. So the work that I've done is mainly around opioid use. And when we talk about when you don't mention heroin, when you don't mention prescription pills, specifically opioid pills versus stimulant pills, if you think that they're all the same and there isn't that kind of conversation going on in the classroom, then you're setting up people for a very dangerous scenario.
Can I ask a quick question?
Thank you.
With the onslaught of heroin addiction in the last couple of years, how did they justify the fact that that wasn't part of the program? Why were they not mentioning heroin?
So one of the reasons, I mean, when I first talked about drug education, including heroin in drug education, I'll tell you, if there had been a pail of rotten fruit, it would have been thrown at me. Because the idea that if we're going to talk about that, if we're going to have that conversation, that we're giving kids information that maybe they shouldn't have, that we should not talk about that.
Like you would all of a sudden, just by mentioning it, make kids go, hey, we got to find out more about this heroin. It sounds good, like that.
We got to go get heroin. Oh. Yeah, you know.
No, and more information is better.
And so I think that we kind of fell apart. We weren't addressing the drugs that cause the most danger in any of our prevention programs. I know Robert Crown Center is doing something with opioids and heroin, and some of the research that was quoted in the Red Eye was to inform the Robert Crown Center's programming. So it's not that I believe that all of it is ineffective, but I don't think that kids they feel sometimes a little belittled by their drug education. They feel like they're being treated as stupid or
you
idiots.
Said that there was a pamphlet or something that a teenager got that looked like it should have been given to an elementary school kid.
Yeah, and I think even when you look online and you look at how we treat drug education, it's not hitting the developmental age and stage appropriately, meaning you want more sophisticated materials for older youth and, you know, different ones for younger. But I also think that as a world, as in the United States, we need to be doing support. It can't all be delivered in the schools. It has to be sort of a community-wide effort with hospitals, with doctors, with coroners, with a whole host of people to support healthy living and healthy lifestyles, and to be resources for young people who need to know more information.
Sheriff Dave is checking in. We have like 30 seconds here. I know it's not fair to give you the attention right now, but Sheriff Dave, you have been involved in the DARE program.
Well, no, not DARE. I used to be Porter County Sheriff. I'm retired, so technically I'm Consultant Dave now. But I wanted to thank your guest, Kathy, because I think she was involved in the Roosevelt study 10 years ago here in Porter County, and we were kind of at the vanguard of heroin addiction. And really, you know, we can't be you can't be a prophet in your own land. And what we in law enforcement knew all along was highlighted by that Roosevelt study, and frankly, for good cause, scared the hell out of parents here in Porter County. And it's been a big benefit. So I want to thank you, and also maybe talk about maybe drug testing, so that it gives your kids an out when they're offered, hey, no, you know, my folks, I can't because my folks will drug test me.
That's not a bad idea, but then it turns into...
Then the American Academy of Pediatrics has a position statement that says,
well, it's
don't
like you're a
that.
Prison warden in your own house. So, Sheriff Dave, thank you. We're out of time here,
thank
but...
You.
And honestly, Kathy Kane Willis, there are texts for and against what you're doing. But the bottom line is if somebody wants to find out about this research that you've done, where can they look at the information and then decide what's right for you and your kids and your family?
Absolutely. There's no one size fits all for anybody, and we need to be aware of those things. Our research reports are available on the Roosevelt website, www.roosevelt.edu/ICDP. We also have an overdose prevention website. That's www.stopoverdoseil.org. So,
do that again. Forget the triple dubs. Just
overdoseil.org. And you can find out about overdose prevention, naloxone, how to get these deaths down.
So we hope so.
And that's the goal, regardless of how we do it. And really, there are angry people and there are people who support what you're doing. And the bottom line is we just have to have some discussions with our children that explain more than just don't do drugs.
I think it's really important. And to find out if your kid is using, why are they using?
Good points. Kathy, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate you being here. A quick break and then some news. Kim Gordon has the news for you. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Hey, Bill, Eric Zorn has gotten much nicer looking.
Yeah, far better looking than ever before. That's because the role of Eric Zorn is being played by Kristen McCreary today, writer for your Chicago Tribune. Hi, Kristen.
Hi.
How are you?
Does that mean I have to be musically inclined and play my fiddle?
Yes,
and,
okay. You have to call a square dance at some point during today's
no
interview.
No, see, no, your partner, and swing her out the door.
First of all, happy holidays to you. Everything was good
the
holiday season?
Yes,
yeah?
It was excellent. It's a little difficult to be back at work today.
I know.
Isn't it?
It takes a little bit of an adjustment period, but everything will be
still
back to normal.
Still in first gear, kind
Don't
of
worry.
Grinding to second.
It's going to be fine. The mayor has another big day ahead of him today. Now, he's had an interesting couple of weeks, if not months.
He had to cut his vacation short, Bill.
He came
Bill.
Back from Cuba early. Yeah. And quickly, before we get to what's going on today with him, I guess that was the right thing to do, but I'm not sure why.
Cutting his vacation short?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are some who say he actually did not cut his vacation short, that there's a limited amount of time that Cuba allows vacationers to be there, and his office was sort of sketchy, but who cares? Let's just say he cut his vacation short. I think it was probably important to come back after the police department in the latest case accidentally and admittedly shot
right
an
away.
Innocent person right away.
Right away they admitted that, because I saw that come across in the news, and the mental illness that was not mentioned on the 911 call, and right away the cops are saying in a statement, you know, it was an accidental shooting. Like, wow.
Right. That is a big change from what we've seen in
yeah.
the past.
But the move of him coming back and cutting a vacation short, that's a PR move to say, when there's trouble in the city, no matter where I am on the planet, I'm going to come back and do my best to address it. You're not going to go back and save either of the two people's lives that were murdered, or that were accidentally killed. I shouldn't say murdered, accidentally killed. That's already happened. But I guess as the mayor, you have to take some responsibility and say, look, I know how this looks. I'm out of town at a very inopportune time. I'm doing my best to get back and fix whatever I can possibly fix.
That's exactly correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. All right. All right. So today, what exactly is going on this afternoon?
So the mayor appointed someone new to the Independent Police Review Authority. And this is this group. It's supposed to be outside of the police department. And when there is police misconduct or a police shooting, they do the investigation. It's supposed to be very independent. Studies have shown, including in the Tribune newsroom, it is not terribly effective. So he did a shakeup of that group, and they are announcing today further changes they will be making to hold police officers more accountable.
Do we have any idea what those changes will be just yet?
Some of them appear to just be moving people around. That could be significant, because in the past, the panel of reviewers has often been people who are very close to the police department, retired officers, people who are part of fraternal order of police. And so you end up getting a much softer touch with some of these officers. I think they will announce a more civilian component
really?
To this, and more community input and quicker release of information. I mean, some of the criticism about IPRA in the past, it takes 2 or 3 years before you even get to whether an officer is going to be disciplined. And that's just not right.
It sure isn't. And then they put them in, you know, a desk job or something while this is going on. But is it even being
investigated?
Well,
that's one of the things they're changing. Is it used to be, was it 3 days of desk service? And now it's going to be a much longer length.
It's 30 that taking you out of patrol. If you're a patrol officer, it's an automatic 30 days that you will be evaluated. It could be longer than 30, but
that's the new rule, right?
That's the new rule.
What was the old rule? I think it was just a handful of days, and that was it.
It was. It varied, but there was no real check with the officer to see if he or she were ready to go back on the back out on patrol.
No psych evaluation or anything like that?
Not anything really significant. So that was one of the changes that Mayor Emanuel announced a couple of weeks ago. And then just last week, he announced more tasers and more sensitivity training for police when they show up on the scenes. So today will be another day where we try to gauge how much out of the hole Rahm can dig himself, if these changes are going to be enough, if it's going to quell some of the protests, if it's going to quell some of the calls for him to resign. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think he'll ever resign, but there is a bill in Springfield that will allow voters to recall him. And I think he's doing everything he can to, you know, take the heat off of that issue as well.
Now, the recall has been brought up weeks ago, before the Christmas holiday and everything. And I don't know. I can't even remember who said that that couldn't happen. That's not going to happen. I don't like the people going to picket at his house. That to me is just really disrespectful. Whether you're angry at what he's done, that's his home. Go picket at the office. Yeah, go do it at the Bears game. Although, Bill, you mentioned there's
so many other reasons to picket at a Bears game than this. There really is. I got
and
a laundry
more
list.
Oh, right.
So much more.
But
meaningful.
His home, that just seems wrong to me.
Well, it's the city has done a good job of trying to accommodate the protesters, as you know, because you have a front row seat to it when it happens. I mean, police have been very tolerant. They've shut down Michigan Avenue. They've allowed people to lie in the street. They've rerouted traffic. So I think, you know, going to his home, I'm sure, seems, you know, somewhat distasteful, but he's got such a bad reputation in certain parts of the community here that they don't care. They don't care if they're being.
There was a time where people said his aspirations, Rahm Emanuel's aspirations, were a lot higher than just being the mayor of Chicago, that he wanted to go higher up eventually. Are those aspirations just totally a thing in the past now with what's gone on with him the last couple of months?
I think anyone can recover from anything. Voters have a very short memory. But if you look at what has happened so far, he's in his second term. He's had two school CEOs leave, one under indictment. The school's about to file for bankruptcy. The teachers are about to go on strike for a second time. The finances of the city are really no better off than when he started. Crime is obviously a big problem. We've got the Justice Department investigating the police department.
Right.
I mean, these are big issues that a lot of mayors don't recover from. So I think that's why we've seen national stories lately kind of questioning, will he be able to bounce back?
We have to take a quick break. How does that sound? And then we'll continue with Kristen McQueary from the Chicago Tribune. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. We can be reached very easily, 312-981-7200. Kristen McQueary's here, fine writer for your Chicago Tribune. Wendy, you had a question for Kristen about the police sensitivity training.
Yes, I believe that there are wonderful police officers out there and that I respect police officers, but it seems in certain areas of the city that respect is gone. And will this training help? Is there any way to repair the relationship between some communities and the police force?
I think we can hope, yes. I mean, I think police training has gotten to be too much of a militarized exercise. We see that when they jump out of squad cars and their weapons are drawn. And honestly, you can't deny the fact that if you go into a lot of these neighborhoods, there are very few people who have had good interactions with police. It's just a fact.
But a lot of people say, oh, boo-hoo, that's not true. You need to show them respect. But they have doubts with the respect because in the past, they have not been treated fairly.
Right. I mean, if you just even, and this can be an emotional conversation, it can be data driven. If you look at the data, minorities get pulled over more. They get their cars searched more often. You know, so you have an experience like that and automatically your trust level drops. So I do think it could help if they get back to, you know, what I hear from people, residents in these neighborhoods is it did used to be a trusting relationship. And you had the same officer in the same neighborhood working the same beat, watching the same kids walk home from school every day. And now we just have lost sort of that connection. Officers are being reassigned everywhere. They're working overtime to cover some of these neighborhoods. So you don't have that sense of familiarity that I think would help if we went back to that sort of style.
They've not replaced yet Gary McCarthy, Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy. Part one of my question is, who in their right mind would want that job at this stage? Part number two is, what could they possibly do differently that he was not doing?
That is a really good question, because I, for one, don't really think change at the top makes a big difference when it trickles down to what is happening in the streets in some of these neighborhoods.
Right.
We're talking about poverty and generations of poverty, and there's really not a lot that one person can change. The interim superintendent, I don't know, he wants the job, John Escalante. I don't know if he's going to get it, but he's talking about bringing back some of these strike forces that were disbanded under McCarthy because he wanted more people on the streets. But these were targeted units that would, you know, swoop into neighborhoods that were gang infested and really try to cut down on violent behavior. So I think that's one thing that the new superintendent could do. and emphasizing a lot of the things that they're talking about now, better relationship with police, de-escalating situations, some of this new training that they're talking about. You know, arming officers with tasers, is that going to solve the problem? Not necessarily. But when you had a case like Laquan McDonald where they were asking for a taser and no one had one, that's a change that should have been made 14 months ago that we're just now seeing now.
Yeah.
So there are some things that, would help.
Can I ask the most naive question I've ever asked anyone in my life? I used to watch. No, I've asked some very naive questions in my career, so get ready for this. I used to watch Hill Street Blues when I was a kid, the cop show Hill Street Blues. And on Hill Street Blues, Captain Frank Furillo had this thing where he would call in the various gang members in the city and he'd have a sit down with them and say, look, I know things are rough out on the streets, but let's all work together and figure out how we can all get along. And it would work. And I know it was a TV show, but
Pizza
I wonder.
Man did it.
Pizza Man always got it done. I always wonder to myself, could that ever really happen? Could a police officer, a guy who's in charge of the police of a major city, call in the gang leaders and say, hey, look, I know you guys don't like each other by nature. I understand that. But we'll all live a lot longer and happier if we figure out some sort of an accord agreement. Could that ever possibly work?
You know what, Bill? It did happen here. Jody Weiss, the previous superintendent, did something like that. He kind of kept it on the down low, but it came out that he had a couple summits with gang leaders. And then he was ousted for another reason.
Yeah.
I think Gary McCarthy has had some of those conversations as well. I think he did.
Really?
He did. But, you know, that's controversial in its own right. And a lot of people argue that the chaos and the violence we're seeing is not necessarily old-fashioned gang turf wars. It's social media, someone getting mad at someone else. You know, somebody calls somebody out on Facebook and they are mad at someone's girlfriend. I mean, those are things that I don't know that sitting down with gang leaders would fix.
Oh, all right. All right. That was my naive question.
It's not a naive question.
And I mean, we've had that Tamara Manassa on, Mothers Against Senseless Killing from that mask organization. And the bottom line is to humanize all this and to make relationships and to, like, she's all on top of, you go respect that older gentleman who lives down the block. You go bring him something to eat because we need to make connections, basically. And so that's a good idea. Whether or not it could happen.
It is, and it's ceasefire does a little of that where they try to, you know, stop retaliation crimes. And it's relationship building. It's knocking on doors. It's sitting down with some people who have, you know, felonies and they're worried that that's going to be the next target.
Right.
That's a little bit of what that organization does.
Let's go national for just a little bit with the big elections coming up in November. As time goes on and we get closer and closer to those elections, do you see it getting even stranger than it's already been with Donald Trump and the auxiliary players around him, or will things stabilize at some point?
No, this is the craziest rise of a presidential nominee that I've ever seen. I mean, he was just over the weekend saying, you know, but he's tapping into something. He says, you know, politicians are all talk and no action, and that's BS. That's BS. And people are clapping and
right.
I mean, when would you ever see a presidential nominee, you know, openly swear and curse? And
yep,
it's beyond what I can really wrap.
Well, that's the guy I'd vote for. And I would like to be his first lady. Keep up with him.
The new tactic now at this point is the attacks on Hillary Clinton from him are going through Bill Clinton and talking about his past, to put it politely. But Trump has some deficiencies in that area as well, doesn't he?
That is a very kind way of saying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Hillary's relationship with Bill, whatever Bill did, should be completely off limits. And I mean, nothing is for Trump,
right.
So we shouldn't be surprised. But that's just really tacky, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess we should expect it coming from somebody who says whatever is on his mind at any moment.
When will some of the also-rans realize that this next presidential election is not in their cards? Is it after the first primary? When are we going to see some drop-off with the people who are not among the leaders?
Well, the caucuses are the first week in February, I think, in Iowa. I think we'll see some drop-off there.
Yeah.
By the time we get to South Carolina, it will probably be narrowed to maybe three or four.
Oh, you think so, yeah?
But also, by that time, there's not a lot of money involved, you know? So people might kind of hang around and wait for that invitation to maybe be a running mate. You know, if you drop out now, maybe we'll tap you for vice president or cabinet position. So some people linger, you know, knowing they're going to lose, but to use that as leverage.
Do you think Trump will pick himself as a running mate? Do you think that's a possibility?
Can you imagine?
Yes,
I can.
He likes his daughter. Maybe it'll be Ivanka.
Oh, maybe. All right. That's a good move.
She'd be good.
Yeah. Kristen, thank you very much for filling in today. Great to see you. It's Kristen McQuarrie. You can read her work in the Chicago Tribune. We'll take a quick break and find out.
No, no break. Just Bertrand.
Or you can listen to her on the Mincing Rascals podcast every.
I was just going to say that's a good option too, as well. Right. Yeah,
it's where she schools me every Friday.
Oh, all right.
Well, politics is so confusing to me, absolutely confusing, and you make sense of it all for me. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
You're a miracle worker. That's what you are.
Well, she's not. I mean, it's hard to work miracles on the Chicago politics, but you do a good job with it. Thank you so much.
You really do. Thank you, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. If you didn't hear the first half of the show, we just want to thank you for being a listener. We really appreciate it, and we're looking forward to a great year in 2016.
Did you say that the first half of the show?
Yep.
I think you meant to. I don't know.
I thought it. I don't think I said it out loud, but I think something in me was conveying that to the listeners. I think. I hope. I want people to know we're thrilled that they're listening, because we know you have other options when you fly. Thank you for flying with us.
There are no other options, though, for radio at this time of day.
Well, I know there's a channel that does, they call out bingo numbers, and if you're playing at home, you could win a small prize.
Before and after.
Right.
I learned that joke from that station.
That's a good bit, right. That's one of their bingo jokes, so I know that they're on, and then, of course, the polka stations are always up and running. You could listen to that if you wanted to. I sometimes listen to that during the show. I enjoy that very, very much. Earlier, we were discussing how it is now 2016, and there was a time when we were kids that if you thought of that year, like, what is 2016 going to look like? It had a very futuristic look to it, and it doesn't really look that way outside. It looks kind of like it's looked for the last several decades, kind of.
It does. I mean, I know technology has come a long way.
Right.
And I believe the Consumer Electronics Show is happening
in Vegas
right now. So we're going to talk to someone tomorrow from Apt and find out all the cool new gadgets now that I miss iPad.
Right, right.
Can I tell you, iPad sent me on a route that is impure, but I have to tell you about this gadget I saw online.
What was it?
You know how you used to read to your babies when they were in the womb?
Of course, yeah.
And you did too, didn't you? There was this wonderful the Places You Go, Dr. Seuss
book.
Yeah,
I know that one, sure.
And, you know, Jim would read it to my belly all the time, and I don't know if Michael heard him. I don't know. But now they have a gadget that a woman could... you know how babies do well with music?
Mm-hmm.
For the baby to get a better listen to the music, a woman could put this contraption
she could insert
closer
it?
To the baby. Yes.
Oh,
thank you
gosh,
for saying
really?
That. Yes.
So what is it? I know this will sound perverse. I apologize. What is it shaped like?
A tampon.
Oh, it is really?
Isn't that ridiculous?
And it plays music.
Yes.
Wow.
I saw it. It wasn't on Amazon, and I did not order it. I am not pregnant, but that's crazy. I do know that I listened to Bob Marley a lot when I was pregnant with Michael, and we had Bob Marley playing in the delivery room with a bunch of the Mr. Freezes or Flavor Ice.
Right, right,
because
right,
I was
right.
told, get those. You will never, you can only eat ice chips.
Yeah.
Save the day. It was like being on vacation with Bob Marley and Flavor Ice. And he likes Bob Marley.
Oh, he does. So but, maybe there's something to that.
Yeah, but I mean, he could hear it okay.
That seems like it's closer up than it needs to be, maybe. Wow, I didn't know they made such a device.
So that's the technology, and we'll ask the lovely people at Apt if that's surfacing around the Consumer Electronics Show. Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah,
I didn't know. Anyone with an idea can sell something to someone.
Sort of along those same lines, but sort of differently at the same time. Here's what I found, and this goes back to what you just said, and it goes back to how this look 2016. Does it look like we thought it would look when we were kids in the 70s? I found this thing on Huffington Post, and it's things that we did in the 70s that they say you probably couldn't do today. That the world has changed for the most part. Let me run them past you, see if you believe these. One of them is this. Playing out. Oh, I know this one because you and I have discussed this actually a couple of times. Just the mere act of playing outside unattended. When we were kids, on any given day, like let's say on a Saturday, you would leave your house around 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. and you'd come back around dinner time.
And parents never knew where you were.
No.
There were no cell phones tethering you to your parent.
Right. Right. You might come back at lunch, but then there were times where you didn't. If you were in the middle of something, if you were building a fort or trying to cross a creek, you wouldn't come home. And your parents would just assume, oh, they're probably safe. They're just outside playing. That wouldn't happen now.
Or maybe they're at Little Ricky's having some tomato soup and a grilled cheese.
Exactly. Exactly. It says there's a mother in Florida who faces up to 5 years in jail. Why? Well, she let her 7-year-old son go to the park to play unattended.
We talked to her, didn't
they
we?
Have
talk
a story.
To her?
Did you ever on? I don't know. Maybe.
We did. We both did. Yeah, I think you were here.
I was listening to the Polka Station.
Oh, we talked to her attorney.
All right.
Because we couldn't believe it.
It's hard to imagine, but that's how things have changed in one generation. That not long ago, your kid could be outside all day, every day. You just assumed things were good. Today, probably not. You know?
I am not a helicopter parent. I'm really not, and I'm not saying that as a joke. I'm not.
Right.
Dylan got a new Nerf something or other. It's almost like an airsoft gun. They're little pellet
Nerfs. I've seen those. I know what those are, yeah.
So he was out with his friend Clark in the yard, and they were just shooting at each other.
Yeah.
And I found myself checking on them a lot. I mean, we have a fenced-in backyard, but it's just things are different.
Safe. Yeah. Yep, yep.
And then when they went to the front, I said, go in the backyard because we have a fenced-in yard.
Right.
And safer. I am not a helicopter parent, but there's just weird stuff going on.
Oh,
now.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. How about this one? Back then, meaning the 1970s, it was perfectly acceptable to sit on a parent's lap while he or she were driving. Now, I know that to be true. I remember my dad several times we'd be taking a ride and I would sit on his lap. Other times, I've told you this, I would sleep, like I would lay back, you know, the back windshield.
Like a cat.
I would, yeah, like a cat. I would just lay back there. And I'd sleep back there. Today, if you saw that in a car, there'd be cops everywhere. They'd pull you over. You'd go to jail for that.
Is that an American Girl doll? No, it's a real
it's
kid laying there.
It's my kid. He got tired.
And the old cars, we had this, was it a Buick Invicta? It was ginormous.
I remember those. Those are big cars, yeah.
And we would stand in the back seat, right. Like right behind the driver's seat.
Right.
Like, oh, are we there yet? We'd stand up.
Right. I don't think, now keep in mind, I don't know that child seats even existed back then. If they did, I never saw one when I was a kid. I didn't wear a seatbelt till I was in high school. My parents would never make us wear seatbelts.
You still don't always wear it.
More times than not, I do,
it
but there have
be
been
all
I know it should be at all times.
And the seatbelts we had, Bill, were just the ones across your lap.
That
there was no
it.
Shoulder strap when we were growing up.
Never.
And half the time you'd get a car and someone would have cut the, you right. know, if you got a used car or
right.
something, they didn't
right.
even work. Or people would just hook it, you know, and leave it there because it was a nuisance.
I've told my daughters this and they don't believe it's true, but it is true. When I was really little, when I was 2 or 3, my dad thought it was really funny to have me park the car.
What?
So not only would I sit on his lap, but then he would, because he would
take
smoke.
A nap?
He'd be smoking, and I would just, I would park the car. And I was 2 or 3 at the most.
Wait, so you were sitting on his lap
I was
driving.
Sitting on his lap. I was we lived in an apartment, and we would come to our parking lot, and my dad would go, do you want to park the car? And, you know, yeah, why wouldn't you want to park the
right.
car? Right. So then he would light up a Salem, and he'd smoke. And I would park the car from his lap.
He did the pedals, though, right?
Yeah,
you
I
just
wasn't
did the
big
wheel.
Enough to. So today, like, if you saw one of your neighbors doing that, wouldn't you take him aside and go, you know, at some point, you guys are going to crash into something. You can't be smoking while your little kid is parking the car.
Well, the smoking isn't going to make him crash.
No, it's not, but.
The fact that a little kid right. is doing it.
Right. Right. And I thought it was the great, like, to me, that was the greatest. It took me a while to park the car because sometimes I had to parallel park. And
why am I thinking of Stewie from Family Guy?
It was like that. It was like that. But to me, like, that was the greatest part of the day is me. I not only drove the car, I parked the car semi-successfully. But, like, that's not safe in any way.
No, things have changed dramatically in the cars. Rich, what do you know about your first couple of cars?
Oh, because I think I'm pretty much your age. I'm not going to say when I was born because, as we all know, Wendy, you were only, what, 22 years old, right?
23
God
now.
God love you.
Yeah.
And but, no, the first couple cars that I rode in as a child, forget child seats, the way they came from the factory, they didn't have seat belts. Even the third car that I rode in only seat belts in the front seat because the thinking then in automotive engineering is, well, the backseat passengers will stop when they fly into the back of the front seat. But, I mean, when I was a kid, my dad had this, and it wasn't something he made. I think you could buy it. He bought it either at Sears or Orshovsky, if you remember them. thousands of pages of automotive stuff you don't really need. But it was like this thing with hooks that you hung over the front seat, and it made a flat board that sat on top of the back seat. So instead of the footwells, you just hit this flat spot that made like a mini playpen. So the kids could run around like madmen.
Oh, no. Really? They had that?
Because, you know, they actually hid that. And I remember it wasn't something he made. It was something he bought. And obviously other people bought them or else they wouldn't have been mad.
Sure.
That was it. I let the kids run around like crazy people in the back. You know, if we hit the brakes, the front seat will stop them.
Well, it's true because they were all the bench seats. And,
yeah, they were.
You know, Rich, your cars didn't have seat belts, but you can be damn sure there was an ashtray
front,
back,
everywhere,
and center.
Everywhere.
There was an ashtray, including in the back seats, you know, just in case the kids want to take it up early.
Absolutely. On the door handle, that they'd flip up and there'd be, now I'd always put my gum in there.
Oh, sure. They were good for gum. But my dad's ashtrays didn't even come out. Like, you know, at some point they figured out, well, we got to make the ashtrays so they can come out so you can clean them. The ones we had a Ford LTD with the ashtrays, they were just in there.
Yeah.
You couldn't take them out.
Car vac, baby.
Yeah, that was it. That was your only option.
Or just leave them in there.
I love those old ashtrays with that flip-up stamp metal lid that would slice your finger off if you opened it the wrong way. Safety.
And do you remember...
It was chrome-plated, the blood wiped off you.
Yep.
Right,
beautiful.
And they had those same ashtrays on an airplane, because for a while you could smoke on an airplane, which, God,
for
was
a long
that
time.
Awful.
Yeah, I know.
Awful.
I know.
Thank you, Rich.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we have more of these. These are things that were perfectly acceptable back in the 1970s, might cause some concern today. I see some people on the line, 312-981-7200. We'll get to your calls and more of this next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. We're talking about things that we used to be able to do back in the 1970s that you could never do today, things like playing outside unattended or sitting on your parents' lap while he or she are driving.
You said you did that, and I think David can relate to this. David, you would drive with your dad as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was a salesman, so I was always on the road with him, you know, growing up. But once I got cruise control, he would put it on cruise, and then, of course, he had bench seats. So then he'd slide over to the right, and then I was in the back seat, and I'd jump behind the wheel.
Wow.
And he'd walk right down the road.
Wow.
And
I mean,
there were less accidents back then, too.
Nowhere, you know, but still, it was like totally insane.
That is insane when you hear somebody say that, but it
sure.
was kind of the norm.
Your mom
then.
Knew this? Your mom was okay with this?
Oh, yeah. She was in the back smoking, and, yeah, she was fine. It was one happy family.
Notice there's always cigarettes involved in these stories. There's always a parent's like, I got to smoke. You got to drive. I can't just drive and smoke.
My aunt was, she had this old Chevy, and it just reeked. I never wanted to be
cigarettes?
In her car because it just,
yeah.
it clung to the leather. She called her car Jen because every time she turned it on, back then, like, instead of it would say check engine, it would say, like, Jen for generator.
Generator? Yeah.
Generator.
So she called it old Jen. It was smoky old Jen. God, it stunk.
Well, thanks for the phone call. Have a great time.
No problem.
Bye, David.
Oh, boy. More fun in the car. I'm sorry. You're bringing back memories, Bill, for
sure.
everyone, including Colleen.
Hi, guys. Happy New Year.
You too, Colleen.
So I don't remember much stuff from my childhood, but I remember this. I have five siblings, so six kids. 1974, a Chevy Impala. So my mother was 8 months pregnant at the time, driving down to St. Louis.
Smoking, probably.
With my grandparents.
Oh, jeez.
Getting a flat tire. So we have my grandparents exiting the car, my father, my mother, who is 8 months pregnant, and five children.
So what, you got 10 people in an Impala?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh my God!
Impala seats 20 for dinner. You could have more than you could have way more than 10 in Impala.
Thank God we weren't going to Florida though. We were only going to St. Louis from the city.
So. You're lucky.
The good old days. Thank you, Colleen.
All right, Happy New Year.
You too.
Now, one of these, speaking about smoking, these are things that you could do back in the 1970s. You probably couldn't get away with today. One of them has to do with cigarettes. There was a time, and I remember this, where a child could go to the store and purchase cigarettes for your parents. You would just say to the person at the shop, these are from my mom or these are from my dad. Here's the money. And they would hand you cigarettes, no questions asked. I don't think that would play today.
No way.
There's no way, right?
I used to forge notes. And my mom never smoked. But I would be like, please allow Wendy, my daughter,
right.
to pick up a pack of Salem Lights for me.
And that worked for you? They got it? Now, I also had this. I don't know if this will apply to you at all, but when I was a kid, I would build models. When I was in grade school, I'd build a model car, a model airplane. And there was a time where you couldn't buy tester's glue unless your parent was there with you.
Right.
So you could buy cigarettes. You could go in and say, these are cigarettes for my parents. But if you try to buy tester's glue to build a model, no, that's where we draw the line.
Because huffing could kill you instantaneously. Right. The cigarettes take many years, right, and then they're not responsible.
That's the way they looked at it back then. Yeah.
Here's another thing, talking about going back in time to the 70s. Bruce, you you did some kind of game in school. Hello, Bruce. Bruce,
are you there? No. They played the quiet game in school. Did you ever play the quiet game?
No, but he played a knife game. Does he mean the one where you spread out your fingers and you take a knife and go in between the in between spots?
What he was telling me was it was like you would throw a knife at your friend's foot.
That's mumbly peg.
Yes, that was it.
Is that
mumbly
it?
Mumbly peg?
Yeah. So two guys would stand across from each other, and you would take a knife, and then you would try to get it as close to the guy's foot as you could without impaling him. But more times than not, it ended with somebody getting knifed in the foot. That's how it went.
That's not a fun game.
That's not a fun game. I don't know why that game took off, but I remember, like, they would warn us, don't play this game. But then there were always kids that would, you know these kids today with the knives. They would play it anyway. But yeah, that's how, more times than not, the game will end with you getting stabbed in the foot with a knife.
How does that get called mumbly peg?
I don't know the derivation of that. I don't understand it. But the one you're referring to is you spread your fingers out, you take a knife, and as quickly as you can, you try to get the knife in between each of the fingers without losing a finger.
Another stupid game.
Right.
What is this?
Most knife games aren't that good, really. There's very few good knife games that don't end with bloodshed.
How to play mumbly peg. This you can go to The Art of Manliness.
Yeah, that's a book I wrote during the break. I just finished it.
Every man should carry a pocket knife. It's handy for cutting open packages, severing twine, and of course, eating an apple like a badass.
Right.
But it can also be a source of instant anywhere entertainment because it's all you need to play the game of mumbly peg. Never heard of the game? Don't worry. Today we'll give you the scoop on how to play this knife-throwing pastime that was once popular among 19th century schoolboys, Wild West cowboys, and World War II soldiers.
Yep, that's where I learned it.
Which one?
At the Battle of the Midway.
All you need to play mumbly peg is a friend, a couple of pocket knives, and a bit of a skill. It's the perfect way to pass the time when hanging outside with your friends, relaxing around the fire on a camping trip, or bonding with your son.
I love the way they say a bit of a skill, because if you don't have that bit of a skill, your friend's going to end with a hole in his foot. He's going to have stigmata. So have a good time.
Wow, Mark Twain's Tom Sawyer Detective mentions mumbly peg as being a favorite game with the children at Old Tom's school.
I didn't know that. All right, that legitimizes it a little bit. It's still as dangerous a game as you could ever play.
Wow. All right, well, that's from theartofmanliness.com. That, of course, Bill Leff's website.
I wrote that. Yeah, I wrote that. So, enjoy. But think about it. If you saw your boys playing that game, how quickly would you put a stop to that? Because, you know, there's no happy ending to that game. It's impossible. Somebody ends up with a bloody foot.
Bruce, how many times did your foot get bloodied?
It didn't. I lost plenty of times when I had to do the splits and fall over. Do the splits, you know, because wherever your knife stuck, your opponent had to move his foot to that location.
Oh, yeah, you had to keep spreading your legs farther and farther apart, right?
Yeah, each round, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
If the knife stuck at your partner's, he had to move his foot to where the knife stuck.
Right.
And then it was your turn. You would go back and forth until somebody would fall over because they couldn't spread their legs any further.
That's a fun game.
This was during lunch and during recess and grade school, and all the boys had their folding knives.
Yeah, all the guys did carry that.
And I swear to you, teachers would see, like in my school, teachers would see this.
And look the other way?
And not stop the game. How do you not stop that game?
I don't know. Bruce, thank you for calling. I bet Corey Crawford would be very good at that game.
He's a great mumbly peg player.
A mumbly pegger?
Yeah.
And real quickly, another thing that happened when we were kids. Mikey, what did you do for Gramps?
I used to walk down, get his ID, take the money, go down to the old Chicago Stadium and buy a beer for him.
How about that? And they never stopped you. They just assumed, well, it's for his grandfather. It's fine.
But it was.
My grandfather's 70 years old. Yeah, I don't think anyone's trying to use a 70-year-old's ID. So.
But you did give it to your grandpa, right? You didn't drink it yourself.
No, I was probably 11 years old.
Yeah. See, we were all honest. More back honest then. Back then.
Yep, so true.
Thank you, Mikey. He still goes by Mikey because that's still what Gramps called him.
Yeah, I would too. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got the news coming your way next. And then Rich Lankoff will join us to talk about the legal ramifications of the Bill Cosby case.
Don't say Ram.
There have been some new, some changes.
There she goes again.
There's been a change or two. His wife is now being asked to testify in a civil suit.
This
Camille,
is crazy stuff.
I know.
He is going to die behind bars. Do you know this?
I wonder. Well, we'll get the scoop from Rich Lankoff. That's coming up after Steve's news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bill, there's always room for Jell-O.
That's what they say, Wendy, that there is always room for Jell-O, and we're going to talk about the spokesperson for the Jell-O Corporation, the Jell-O pudding man himself, Bill Cosby. Rich Lankoff is in the studio with us. Rich, first of all, Happy New Year. Thanks for being here.
Happy New Year.
Great to see you. We bring you on from time to time to help us sort out various questions in the legal world. We all know what Bill Cosby's story is of late. You know, it's silly to even recount this, but he was America's favorite TV dad. He was one of the finest stand-up comics of all time. And then, as we have found out over the last year plus, 40 women have come across and said that he has molested them. He has sexually assaulted them over the years. Now, because of the statute of limitations, he was not up for these crimes. But now, all of a sudden, one of them took place within the legal term.
By a few days, right?
By just a few days.
Yeah, just under the 12-year deadline in Pennsylvania, the prosecutor charged him with this crime. And, just within days of the statute of limitations running. So this is probably the only criminal case that they'll be able to pursue because of the statute of limitations. But, yeah, he will face charges on this one.
Now, the one of the new folds that just happened over the past week is that his wife, Camille, is now being told more than likely she'll have to testify against him.
For what? I mean, what? Why is she being called to the stand? That's what I don't get that.
So there's a couple of angles. What we heard on Thursday was in a civil suit. So there's a Massachusetts civil suit in that's being heard in federal court, brought by three women who are alleging defamation against Bill Cosby, because he came out and said that their allegations against him are untrue. So they're saying that he defamed them by denying their charges. In the civil suit, they issued a subpoena for a deposition for Camille Cosby. The deposition was supposed to be this week, and Camille Cosby went in on a motion to quash that subpoena, arguing that because of the marital privilege, which is well recognized, she shouldn't be forced to testify against her husband. The federal judge said that's not going to apply in this case. The interest of you testifying outweigh the marital privilege, and also because she is Cosby's manager, that negates the privilege. So that's in the civil suit. In the criminal case against Cosby in Pennsylvania, that's a whole other issue. The prosecutors will likely call her. The defense team wants her to support Cosby, as she came on and did when this all came up a few years ago. We'll see what happens in the criminal case. But in the civil case, she'll likely testify.
How common is this? I know we've learned that a spouse isn't supposed to be able to testify against their husband or wife. But how often do they find a loophole like this?
It's, you know, a pretty hard and fast rule. It's a pretty well-established privilege. It's like, you know, attorney-client, doctor-patient. We've all heard of those. The spousal privilege is one that's generally accepted, the idea being you shouldn't have to testify against your spouse for things that occur during the marriage. There's a couple of exceptions. For example, if the spouses are suing each other, obviously that doesn't apply. And if there's a criminal action by one against the other, it doesn't apply. But in this case, generally, the privilege is upheld. But in this case, again, because she has this dual role as his manager as well, then her testimony is definitely relevant and will probably, as the judge ruled, the privilege won't be upheld.
Aren't you guys all shocked that, you know, Hannibal Buress, this comic, comes up with this? He did this bit about Cosby even before it didn't he do it like a couple years ago, and then it started getting ahead of steam, and then people were glomming onto this. I mean, if he knew this, why does it take Hannibal Buress to take Bill Cosby down? That's my question.
Yeah, I mean, it was a YouTube clip by the comedian that you mentioned that really started the ball rolling, even though this has been going on, you know, the allegations. The charges have been going on for at least 10 years. In this case, we know that the complaints date back at least 10 years and that there was an investigation criminally into it, and the prosecutor didn't bring charges. So it's been out there for a long time. Why it took Hannibal Buress' video to get it really seriously looked at, who knows? It is interesting.
Rich, are they allowed, during this particular case, it's a civil case, are they allowed to even consider the fact that now we're looking at 40-plus women making allegations that Bill Cosby had some sort of sexual incident with them? Can they look at that, or do they just have to just single this one out?
Yeah, great question. So in the civil case, they're going to look at everything. They're going to look at all the evidence. They're going to look at the fact that there's been all of these allegations. The real question, the real interesting legal question, is in the criminal case, whether the prosecutor will be able to introduce evidence of these other accusers. He shouldn't really be able to, right, because it's only accusations.
Right.
You shouldn't be allowed to offer accusations as evidence of Cosby's guilt in the criminal case. Will that evidence get in? It probably will. Even if it doesn't get in, the 12 people sitting on the jury inevitably will have that in their mind, right? We've talked on this show before, as well as on Legal Face-Off, about whether you can get a fair jury in the Cosby case. Even if that evidence doesn't get in, what juror won't know about the 40-plus other women who have alleged sexual misconduct?
But now here's what I've been told about the jury process is they can have knowledge of it. They just can't have their minds made up as to whether or not he or whoever is guilty or innocent. But they can have knowledge of it, just not have a mind made up about
it. Exactly true.
Right?
The question isn't whether you can find 12 jurors who haven't heard about Cosby's alleged misconduct. I mean, you'd have to go to Neptune for that, right?
Yeah.
On this planet, you're not going to find 12 people who haven't heard about it. But to your point, you're correct. The question isn't whether they've heard about it, but the question is whether they have made up their mind about Cosby's guilt or innocence before hearing all of the evidence in this case. That's the bigger question. And again, you know, you'd like to think that there are jurors who, even though they've heard about these allegations, can put that aside. But in reality, you know, that's the mystery of juries.
It's very hard to believe that he did something like this. And I feel bad for some of the women who are coming forward to accuse him, because they're getting raked over the coals on a lot of internet sites. It's like, this woman's a crack addict. She has a history, a sordid past, a legal history. And it's terrible to think that they are getting raked over the coals because of their accusations. Although I feel like, Bill, you would be a perfect juror, because seriously, you don't want to believe this. So
you
want to listen to the evidence and see. I don't know if I believe each and every one of these women, but it's terrible for me to even say that out loud.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the numbers are compelling. I mean, I think the numbers right now are 50 plus. It's hard to believe that this amount of, you know, this group of people would somehow collude and get together and decide to make up accusations against Bill Cosby. He's alleging that it was all consensual. It's hard.
But some of them, like, were allegedly violated by him and continuing to see him.
Correct.
Those are the things in question.
The woman in this case, in the Pennsylvania case, Constant, after the alleged night where he drugged her, she still came back twice to his house. That will be brought up by the defense. You know, why did you continue to have relations with and even, you know, why were you continuing to go to his house if this happened? You know, there's a whole psychosis of being abused, of course.
Right.
There's a whole, you know, there's all issues about returning to the person that abused you that will be brought up by the prosecution. But you're right. These women will and have been, as we've seen, be raked over the coals for this.
I held in my head for a little while the small hope that things were on the up and up. Then I saw on, I want to say Dateline, one of the shows that if it's not Dateline is like Dateline, they had on a stage, they had 30-something of the women. I don't know if you saw this or not. it was impossible to not watch those stories and go, these women are not lying. These women are telling. Because you could see, not from whatever woman was telling their version of the story, but from the reactions of the other ones, like, wow, I thought, because they all kept saying the same thing. I thought at the time it was the world against me, that when I told the world that Bill Cosby did this to me, no one would believe it. And sometimes, like, their mothers or their managers or whoever they would tell would go, what are you talking about? Bill Cosby would never do something like that.
Right.
And you could just see the familiarity in the room of people going, I thought I was the only one experiencing that.
Yeah, I mean, again, the sheer volume of women, the similarity in stories, the detail in which they describe the alleged acts. You know, it would be hard-pressed to look at that as a group, as a composite, and think that there's not something there.
Maybe not each and every one of these women will be telling the truth. I don't know. But this guy's going to end up serving his last few years in prison, I have a feeling.
Yeah, no question. I mean, the charge in the Pennsylvania criminal case can be up to 10 years. Generally, those kind of cases get around 2 or 3 years if convicted. I think Cosby's 74 or 76.
And not in really great health.
We saw him stumbling to the courtroom.
But is that an act at all, Rich? There have been times where people in a similar situation will say, I'm going to make things look really bad right now. Is that a possibility here?
Sure. I mean, he's an actor, of course. His defense team is saying that he's blind.
We did meet him though, and he autographed stuff for my sons, which is weird. I was cleaning and I found it, and my 16-year-old goes, "What do we do with this Bill Cosby autograph?" And I'm like, "Hold on to it. I don't know. We're not going to display it, but yeah, hold on to it." And he was saying, "Here, put
his
it right in front
terrible.
Of me because I can't really see. I believe glaucoma or something." He does not. I don't know. He's a great actor, evidently, because who would have thought for a second that he would have done any of this?
Yeah, I mean, we've all seen the TV coverage of him. He doesn't look great. That could be partially an act. Who knows? But listen, I don't think he has to. A large segment of the jury pool is going to be impressed by the fact that he's Bill Cosby.
Right.
I mean, remember, this was like the biggest star of the 80s, worth $400 million by most accounts. At one point, you know, just a decade or so ago, he talked about buying NBC. This is a major superstar. So there is an issue with the jury just being swayed by his celebrity and not looking at the evidence. And, you know, if he seems more sympathetic and he seems in ill health, that could even be a larger benefit to him.
Let me add to that. If you look at celebrity cases over the past decade, and you can go to O.J. Simpson, you can go to Robert Blake, you can go to Phil Spector, pick the celebrity. In almost all those cases, all the ones I just mentioned, those guys walked away.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
and a lot of it had to do with the fact that the jury or the judge was in
Phil
some
Spector
kind of
awe. Phil Spector didn't walk away.
He's not doing time. Phil Spector's free, isn't he?
I thought he was in jail.
I think he's free. I'm not.
No.
I think he's free.
But, you know, this case, even if you know, everything, even if you get a great jury, even if the jury is going to, you know, forget everything they know and listen to the evidence, they're not swayed by his celebrity, they're not swayed by his ill health, the fact is, from a legal perspective, from a criminal perspective, this is a very tough case to win. This prosecutor has a 98% victory. Percentage, a record. So he generally doesn't bring cases that he can't win. That being said, remember, this all happened over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The first prosecutor decided there wasn't enough evidence to convict him. You've got eyewitnesses who are gone, dead, forget. I mean, the reason these cases aren't brought this late into the statute of limitations generally is because they're hard to prove as the years go on. They don't become easier. They become harder.
Yeah, but for women, I think a lot of times they don't want to reveal this information, and it seems like a statute of limitation shouldn't be on this type of case.
Yeah, I mean,
But yeah, the evidence, you know, unless there's a rape kit or something that they have in possession of someone, it's too long.
Yeah, I mean, there is a reason for a statute of limitations, you know, the reason being obvious reasons. You have to, at some point, bring the case forward. And the longer you wait, the less credible the evidence becomes. That's the logic behind it. Pennsylvania has a longer than normal statute of limitations. You could argue that they should be longer, but there is some logic to saying that you could, you know, at some point you have to say that you can't bring credible evidence anymore.
Right.
We have to take a quick break, yeah. And then there's a texter that has a question that wants you to answer it. His name is Rich Lankoff, and Legal Face-Off is the name of the podcast. You can find it on WGNplus.com, or you can listen to this Bill and Wendy show here on 720 WGN.
Quick correction. For me?
In 2009, Phil Spector was found guilty of second-degree murder. He was sentenced to 19 years in North Kern State Prison in California. He was also ordered to pay $17,000 to Donna Clarkson, Lana Clarkson's mother, for funeral expenses.
So he is behind bars. The other celebrities we mentioned are all walking free, but he's in jail.
And this is the key. Throughout his incarceration, Spector has not been allowed to wear any type of wig.
Mm. Oh. Greatest hair of any celebrity defendant, for
incredible
sure.
Incredible hair. No
he
question
had like three
about
or four
that.
Looks through the trial. Yep. The curly and then the pompadour.
And we were
pompadour.
Talking off the air. I've been, you know, watching streaming things I did. I've been watching a lot of Hulu and Netflix. Mm-hmm. And there's this O.J. Simpson movie that's coming out with John Travolta playing Robert Shapiro. And they make him look so great with those crazy arched eyebrows.
It's amazing what eyebrows could do to a kid.
Oh, my God. And who's O.J.? Cuba Gooding?
Cuba Gooding Jr., yeah.
It yep. really looks good.
Yeah. Comes out next month, I think,
Schwimmer's
in
it.
If David Schwimmer's in it, I'm there.
All right. We are talking to Rich Lankoff because sometimes, you know, legalese is not easy for me to understand. And he is co-host of Legal Face-Off. Who's your partner again?
You know, it's been so long. He's literally on a beach in Mexico now. So.
Is he?
That would be Jason rough. Whiteside is the better half of Legal Face-Off, or the other half, I should say.
Yep.
And then you can find that on WGNplus.com. Someone has wants to know if, with getting back to Bill Cosby and everything, someone, and I don't know if this has anything to do with anything, but here's 847. Would you ask if the attacks occurred in the timeline before Cosby's son was murdered? Because I know his son...
Enos.
I think it's Ennis.
I say Enos. I know.
I'm thinking of Theo for some reason. Theo's in my head.
But yes, you're so quick to whip out the Enos.
All right. I just resigned, by the way. I'm no longer on the show, Rich.
You do every time, and I don't know that's how it's pronounced. But he had an alleged drug problem and was killed. And
Bill Cosby's had a lot of things happen.
It's very terrible tragedies.
That have been his son's death, his brother, Russell, who he talked about in his stand-up all mm-hmm. the time, had a very, very difficult life. Bill Cosby, without a doubt, has had some awful, awful things happen behind the scenes. It doesn't make anything that
yeah,
he's
I don't know
being
the connection.
Accused
no,
of correct.
No, but somebody really wanted to know that. What's his son's name?
Ennis. All right.
Cockroach.
Right. Cockroach.
Wasn't Cockroach one of the...
That was his son's friend. Yeah.
And not to say sweaters. That he doesn't deserve it, because honestly, if Bill Cosby is found to be guilty, which, I mean, come on. I remember when this first broke, Bill, it was like one woman, two women. Then when it turned all of a sudden into 20, then into 50,
yeah.
It just seems like there's no way at all this guy could be innocent.
It doesn't seem like... I mean, I know anything's possible, but boy, in this case...
And he tweeted something out over the weekend. I was reading something that he was tweeting, thanks for the support, people, or
right.
something like that.
Right.
I mean, he's still out there. He was doing stand-up, you know, a few months ago.
In Canada. Yeah.
And someone heckled him, remember?
Yeah, it didn't go well.
Yeah.
Did not go well at
Why
all.
Would he put himself out there? I know maybe it's the O.J. syndrome, too, where he thinks, I didn't do this. I don't know why people are saying it. Like, he's got himself convinced.
Yeah, that and legal bills.
I guess.
He's gonna face a lot of legal bills as this continues, both on the civil side and the criminal side. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him out there doing more stand-up.
This is a strange twist, but now that his wife, Camille, and they've been together for years and years and years, if you're her and all of a sudden you're on the stand and you're thinking, this is the guy, I know he's provided for her, I understand that, but really he betrayed her quite regularly. Isn't this her chance?
I hope she takes him down, man. If
that's
I
what
was
I'm
in
saying.
Her
that's
shoes.
That's a golden opportunity to go, all right,
seriously.
Now it's my turn.
Yeah, that would be quite a twist if all of a sudden, after supporting him for this, you know, year or so, she turned around and said, yeah, it's all true.
Yeah.
There are some points in life where you cannot stand by your man, and when you hear some of the horrific things that he's accused of. That would be amazing.
Yeah, no question.
If you look at other cases like Josh Duggar, where his wife, as soon as this was going on, his wife separated herself from this, or Jared Fogle, where as soon as the accusations were made, his wife said, we're done. This can't continue. I'm a little bit surprised, even after all those years together, that she stuck by him.
You're right. Those examples are good examples, because generally when this happens, the wife does come out and like gets out of there right away, gets a divorce right away. After 50 years, you know, maybe she's so used to it. Maybe she's just, you know, sort of shut herself off from the whole thing, and she realizes maybe financially it's better for her.
Right.
Who knows? But at this point, she certainly has come out and supported him.
I've heard celebrities say, I've read this many, many times, where they go, we have an arrangement where the wife will look, you know, because I provide her so many great things, she looks the other way. She gives me my freedom to do things that I need to do. But this is above and beyond that. This is
criminal. A lot
of criminal.
People have arrangements like that?
Some people have arrangements. Not
That's
a lot.
It's a crappy arrangement.
Yeah, I think so.
I think Bill Cosby's just freaking out that his name is being mentioned with the likes of a Josh Duggar and Jared Fogle right now.
Well,
that's sad.
But except if we have to say if, because it hasn't been proved to be true yet, then he is as bad, if not worse, than those other two examples.
I mean, much worse. You know, I mean,
just by volume alone,
it's hard to compare with Jared Fogle. Yeah. I mean, he did some pretty atrocious things, but. Yeah, 50 women over the course of 25 years or so.
Unbelievable.
Pretty terrible.
And other people have speculated these are the women that have come across. Maybe there's more that are still sitting back going, I have nothing to gain from bringing my name into it, so I just won't.
Sure.
So who knows what the
truth
is.
Wasn't he busy working? How did he have the time to be with all these women when he was Father of the Year on The Cosby Show, teaching us all how to grow up?
I can't figure that out either.
Yeah. Also pushing the pudding pops.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, selling the pudding.
Yep.
And what about my sweaters?
What about the sweaters,
and my
Rich?
Sunniness?
You got to take that into account, too. Rich, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Happy 2016. We hope to see you a lot more often in the new year.
Thank you very much, Rich Lankoff,
everybody. We'll take a quick break. We've got news coming up next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Dolly McCarthy feels awful, by the way, Steve.
She's just so cheerful and always happy to talk.
She feels terrible that she interrupted you, so please
No
make
more
amends.
Interruptions in 2016. That's what I
That's what we've got to do. No more interruptions in 2016.
I'll have to be quicker on the buttons.
All right. That's fine.
Need some practice. Business Insider, you know that publication. That is the publication that voted our sexy scientist number 13.
Mm-hmm.
Lucianne Walkowitz from the Adler Planetarium. 13th sexiest scientist?
That's what they said. We all disagree. We believe she is the sexiest scientist, but they said 13. We're not going to quibble. All right. Whatever.
We should get the powers that be at Business Insider on and get her up to at least top five.
At least.
I mean, 13.
That's a slap in the face.
Well, here's what they're reporting today. This is kind of interesting. For the past year, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg has been reading two books a month. He spent other years learning Mandarin or only eating meat that he killed.
Yeah.
Well, this year, 2016, Zuckerberg is clearly envious of Iron Man Tony Stark's futuristic life. He has challenged himself to code his own version of Jarvis from Iron Man, the digital butler who controlled Stark's life and home. I need one so badly.
So he's just going to build this on his own? That's
his goal?
He says
he's going to start with understanding some basic smart home technology that's out there. He's a fan of Amazon's Echo, but then he wants to build something that's custom to his own home. Then he says he's going to start teaching it to understand my voice, to control everything in our home, music, lights, temperature, and so on. I'll teach it to let friends in by looking at their faces when they ring the doorbell.
Nice. That would be nice.
I'll teach it to let me know if anything's going on in Max's room that I need to check out when I'm not with her. That's his daughter.
Yeah, his baby.
And here's the full Zuckerberg announcement. Why do I see this happening?
It will. If he says he can do it, I believe he can do it. He's one of those kind of guys.
Yeah, every year he takes on a personal challenge, and this is it. At Facebook, I spend a lot of time working with engineers to build new things. Some of the most rewarding work involves getting deep into the details of technical projects, and he is going to make this happen.
This makes me look bad because every time I change a light bulb for the next 3 days, I show my wife where I changed the light bulb. Remember when that light was out? Look at it now. I put the new light bulb in. That's like a big deal at my house.
How long is it burnt out before you change it?
A couple of days, maybe a week, and then I change it.
Have you noticed that light bulbs, and I know that this is my, you know how Oprah had her aha moments?
Yeah.
I have my duh moments.
What is it?
The light bulbs seem to burn out within like a couple days of each other.
Right.
Seriously, yeah. When you change them, like two of them in our family room have burnt out.
Yeah.
And I'm going to change them. And then there's going to be two more. So I guess I change them in pairs. That's why that happens.
We have a fixture in our hallway that to get to it, you have to bring a ladder in from the garage because it's really deep. And the light bulbs, it takes six light bulbs.
I love
this joke.
The ones
that are in the, how many light bulbs does it take? Just to get to the bottom light bulbs, you have to bring a ladder in.
And what do you mean it's deep?
It's like almost a yard long. So to get to the bottom bulbs...
Oh, you got to get up and
you
over,
have to get over
and reach
it.
In it.
Right.
Okay. And what does it look like?
It's majestic. So it's such a doing to change one light bulb. And as you just said, and it's so true, every time I change one and it looks beautiful for a day or two...
I know.
Another light bulb then decides... Well, let's really mess you up. Now this bulb is out.
And they're never
that?
Like at the exactly the same time. I
no.
know your mileage may vary in a light bulb.
Right.
And when you buy the 1 year one,
yeah,
it's usually 1 year
it's
and
never
one
a
day.
Year. Yeah,
it goes 1 year. You can get the 2 year ones. I am so determined to keep track
because
track? No, but I have to start. That if Zuckerberg can make a butler, I can keep track of how long the light bulbs last, and I'm suing them if it doesn't.
But you
last
should
two
sue
years.
Them. You should definitely sue them. But don't, like, you know guys, maybe not to the extreme of Mark Zuckerberg, but don't you know guys that whatever's wrong, I've got a couple of friends that whatever's wrong in their house, they just fix it themselves. And I wouldn't know what to do ever in a situation like that.
Was your dad handy?
No.
See, that's where it stems from. And there's no fault here. I'm married to a guy whose dad would always call somebody.
Yeah.
If something's wrong with the toilet, you
right.
call the plumber.
Right.
Something's wrong with, you know, the front porch light is, you know, the gas light's not working. Call the electrician.
Right.
My dad really didn't do much, but my brother did. And when he went away to college.
You became that person.
He kind of said, all right, here's how you change the light and the garage light outside in front of the house. Because you're going to be living with mom and your sister.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have more faith in you to do it. Plus, I like doing that kind of stuff.
See, I don't at all. Because I know that if I get around to doing it, it will be done so poorly that our lives will be in danger. Like whatever I try to fix.
Changing a light bulb is not going to put
your changing
family
a light
in danger.
Bulb. But there's so many things. I've told you before our house, when we lived in an apartment, there was a drawer. You know how they're on those little, like, it's on a track. You know, there's like a wheel at the bottom of the drawer and
little
you flip
glides
it in,
or
right?
Whatever, yeah.
It was off the track. And Terry said, we got to hire somebody to fix that. And I went, hire somebody for that? I'll do that. 3 years later, I fixed it. It took 3 years.
You mean you took the drawer out and put it back in the track?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that took 3 years to do.
But see, sometimes there's a little plastic nib on
right.
the drawer that somehow falls off and you don't realize
yeah.
that's why it's wobbly.
Right.
So then that's when my famous trick is toothpicks and Elmer's glue.
Oh, that would work, wouldn't it?
Yeah, like if any time you're, you know, a screw is stripped and it's
yeah.
like the hole is too big for it,
yeah.
you put a little squirt of Elmer's glue with a toothpick and then you screw the screw back in and that tightens up
did
that hole.
Did you invent this or did you learn this somewhere?
I'm telling you, you can go on YouTube, anything that you need done, you can do. You can all laugh at me because my husband does. I have little bags of scrap wood in the basement, and I know it sounds ridiculous when I say this, but one of those little pieces of scrap wood came in handy because I was missing the glide on the drawer.
Yeah.
And I used a little piece of that wood.
Wow.
And
that's impressive.
I was able to get the drawer fixed.
The week before Christmas, we had a Christmas party at our house, and I had noticed over the past year or two, the toilet seat became loose. So it's
that's tough.
Well, just the mere fact that I did that impressed Terry to no end.
There are two bolts on that thing.
I know, and it meant getting a screwdriver and just moving it to the left and just screwing it on. But she's like, wow, look at what you did. And I know it was one of those things that when you're a parent, you do to a four-year-old to make it sound like they've
right.
done something.
So was that what she was doing, like giving you false praise?
Yep, it was false
praise.
No, she
was inspiring you so you would try
something
else.
So I would do
else.
More
yeah.
things in the future. But even then, I'm like, I don't know. Did I do that right? Because I don't. It's tough jobs like that, I don't usually do.
The toilet seat was loose for how many years where you would slide off
within,
of it?
I would say about a year to a year and a half was the last time that I had tightened it. And now it's great. Now it couldn't be tighter.
Do you know it's going to loosen up again?
Nah. I know what to do now. Now
did
it's
you YouTube it?
First, you wait.
Right. You wait a year, maybe a year and a half, and then you find a screwdriver, and then you fix it. But, I mean, we have stuff downstairs. We have tools that I have no idea. Like somebody, a friend of mine will go, well, all you need to do is you get an Allen wrench and you put it in there. And I'll go, right, an Allen wrench.
You know what an Allen wrench is.
I think I do, but I'm not positive.
It's the hexagonal
thing. That's the one that has the
thing.
Key.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an Allen wrench. All
it
right.
comes with anything you buy at IKEA.
I they got an one? Allen wrench set for Christmas.
Did you really?
You know, like a Swiss Army knife where you whip out the different sizes.
Oh,
that's
parents.
Not a bad thing to have.
Really, what would you do with it?
I don't know what I would do with it, but I'd be so proud that I had an Allen wrench.
Show people. Look what
see
I got.
What I got,
for
I got an Allen wrench just in case I need an Allen wrench.
You know what else I got that I can give you for because you'll probably need it more than me?
What?
It's like a telescoping tube, and on the end of it is about an inch or two. It's a magnet with a light on the end.
What?
Oh.
You like that?
Is that for giving colonoscopies?
No,
what do you
so,
do with that?
When you're doing a project at home and you drop your screw on the floor.
Oh, it just finds it for you.
Magnetic.
Drop
that's
it down
outstanding.
That little headlight on
I
it.
Didn't know they even made those.
Do you know how many times I drop a screw? That is not dirty. You guys all
no,
make everything.
No, it is. It's dirty.
No, it
yes,
isn't.
It is. No, right. It's not.
It's not.
And that thing is amazing because a lot of the screwdrivers are magnetic now, so you can just
right.
put the screwdriver
right,
down
right.
there. But the light.
It's nice.
I could use that with my spelunkers.
Oh, if you had that, you have everything.
I did. Jim brought it for me last year. Remember, I explained this to you. He shared my Amazon Prime account.
Right.
And I see this, like, spelunkers, you know, miner's light. And I'm thinking, he better not be giving this to me for Christmas, along with a wok I wanted from another person. And he gave it to me, and I laughed. I said, I thought this was for one of the kids. What in the world would I use?
But you use it, don't you?
And then he says to me, Wendy, you have changed light fixtures,
right.
and a lot of times I don't know how to hold the flashlight, so it'd be perfect for that. You make jewelry, and I'm like, oh my God, this
got
is
a
the
thousand
best
and one uses.
Present ever. I have never doubted him since then.
And should you need to go cave dwelling at some point, you already have the headwear, so that's a good thing. Terry
and
never.
If you're in an iron ore cave, I've got
yeah, that happens sometimes. Right?
Stalactite is the one hanging down.
Stalagmite hangs
coming up.
Right? Terry never knows the difference between a regular screwdriver and a Phillips screwdriver. And if I ever say to her, how do you not know the difference between a regular screwdriver and a Phillips? She goes, look at all the things that you don't know. And it's true.
And it's flathead and it's Phillips.
No, a regular screwdriver is just the regular end.
Flat.
The Phillips has the four...
prongs.
Four ends, yeah, right? Isn't that right?
Don't you call a regular screwdriver the flat tipped?
I just say screwdriver. I just say screwdriver.
Yeah, it's just a regular screwdriver or a Phillips.
Yeah. What do you say?
Get Lou Manfredini on the line. It's a flat,
flat
head.
He won't talk to us.
Evidently.
After this?
Why would he?
I wouldn't if I was Lou Manfredini. I would be disgusted. I'd pull over out of disgust. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have more helpful hints around the house with us, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You're like Bill Louise.
Yeah.
You know, there were hints from Heloise.
Yeah.
You're Bill Louise.
I know. I'm proud of that. I'll be filling in for Lou Manfredini next week, by the way, on that show. In what is sure to be a disaster.
Isn't that Salzwedel?
Ryan Salzwedel. Yeah.
Somebody says flathead screwdriver or slot screwdriver. It's not just a regular one.
I just say regular. I just want a regular screwdriver.
Because you're a regular guy.
Just bring me the regular screwdriver. What are you going to do with it? We'll see. I don't know.
Someone said listening to this is like the Bizarro Lou Manfredini.
It is, isn't it? It really is.
I watched a YouTube video to help me take my dishwasher apart and fix the drain on my own. The video was great. It was step by step on my exact model.
I know for a fact if I even tried to take our dishwasher apart, we would have to move. We'd have to sell the house because something so horrible would happen. I wouldn't know what to do. Would you know how to do that? I know you say you watch a YouTube video, but it's too complicated.
I got to tell you a little story about Alvin the Bug Guy.
Yeah.
And Alvin the Bug Guy came to our house, and I was at work, so Jimmy Mack said, here, let's move the stove out.
Yeah.
And Jim pulled the stove out by the door, and the door came off
of course.
The stove.
Yeah.
So we couldn't figure out how to get the door back on the stove. I mean, it sounds easy, but there are locks that are clamped so tight because it's an oven door. It's heavy. You want it to stay in the open position.
Right.
We couldn't figure it out for the life of us. So I went on YouTube, and you had to get some pliers.
Yeah.
Locking pliers. Do you know what those are?
Nope. I don't.
And you had
I'm assuming the obvious that they're just pliers that have some kind of a switch on there that you could lock them.
You are awesome.
Is that what
See,
it is?
See, this is step one.
But why? All right. So other pliers don't have that ability.
Other pliers, you just, you know, you control the grip.
Right.
This locks it in place so you could really...
pull harder.
Build up the torque.
Yeah. See? Is that what it is? All right.
You guys, this is so
now we're
good.
Now we're moving. All right, go on.
Okay. So we had to pull the hinges from the door. We had to pull them into the locked position.
Yeah.
And in order to make them stay there, we had to put like a nail to hold it in place. Then you put the oven door on, and then you whip out the nails, and boom, it's all locked into place.
Oh.
We couldn't quite figure that out, so we called our neighbor Jack, who can do anything.
Yeah.
And we were right on the path, but I think we needed his confidence. It's
I understand
you pulled it out, but here, you didn't put the screw in the right place to lock it. And then Jack would then say, put the screw in from this side, because when the door's on, you want to take the locking pliers and pull it out, and it'll be easier to pull it from this side.
See, how does a guy, I don't know Jack, but how does
no,
Jack.
No, you don't know Jack.
I don't know Jack. How does a guy like Jack just automatically have that in his arsenal? How would a guy just know that?
Because he tries.
Yeah.
And he does stuff. And that's when you learn. Like, now I've done it. So when the door falls off again with
ready.
Alvin the Bug Guy, I'll forget how I did it.
All right. Can I throw this one through you? Yeah. During the break.
What am I, a premonition?
You're a premonition. I don't think you exist. All right. You know, I don't know if everyone's fireplace is like this. Probably not. But if you have a gas fireplace, on ours anyway, there's a little knob
that you turn the gas on.
Yeah. You move it to the right. You push it in, and then you move it to the right, and then you have a fire. And when you want to turn it off, you push it in and you move it to the
Usually
left.
Usually it's right to close it, though. Are you sure? Righty tighty, lefty loosey.
No, right gives us fire. Left takes fire away.
Okay.
So.
Gas is opposite, isn't it?
I think so. I don't know. I just know.
No, because our grill, we turn it to the right to tighten
it. It's the opposite with that?
Yeah.
Right. Well, with ours, since we've lived there, it's been like 13 years. Push it in, move it to the right, you have fire, and then stopping the fire.
Fire,
good. So Kylie, one night, when we were all done, she decided that's enough fire, I'm going to turn it off, and turned it too hard. And then we've been told by a fireplace expert that she stripped the gear because she moved it too much, you know? And then I said, well, then just get another gear and put it in there, which would work, except they stopped making those in 1973. It's a really old fireplace. So what would you think it would cost to redo that with a new gear and a new fireplace, whatever they need to do?
Have you called Lindemann Chimney?
I've not, but they're my next call. They are my next call.
Seriously, because they can do all that.
But what do you think that
just
would run?
Just the knob or the whole gas insert?
Because, just because of the fact that that is stripped, like, the easy way is to put on a new one of those, but they don't make them. They stopped making them 30 years ago.
I bet there's some place you could find one.
See, that's what I thought, too, that there's something going on where they don't want you to make you buy a whole new fireplace.
Everything's a conspiracy with you.
I said to Terry, well, a new fireplace, that's going to run to $80, $100 right there.
A couple of hundred.
$1,100. Just to redo what we had.
Kylie
but we
did
can't,
this, make her pay for it.
She should have to pay for it. Right? She stripped it. So it's on her, isn't it? She has to pay for it.
Well, it must be. It's old, right? Because
yeah,
it's
but everything.
Gas.
We have an old house, and I know you do too. So
but
anytime
gas, that
anything.
That scares me. You need to make sure that's up.
It's working.
Yeah.
Right, right. Or we'll die.
Well, yeah, because did she break the
Kylie
knob
Kylie tried
off?
To kill us. No, she didn't do it on purpose, of course, but she has superhuman strength. So all she did was, she's not usually the keeper of the fire. She didn't understand, you know, it's just a quick, easy move. She just went, and moved it, and it stripped, it broke. So now we're out either a fireplace or $1,100.
Or Kylie.
Or Kylie, we may get rid of her.
630 says, Bill, seriously, didn't you ever fix your bike, make a go-kart, or build a clubhouse?
No. Nope.
Welcome back, man. I missed you guys and love you both.
Thank you. We built tree forts, but that was easy. You just nail wood together and hope that it holds up in the tree. That was easy.
My gas fireplace is counterclockwise for on, clockwise for off. What are you guys talking about, left, right?
Push it in, move it to the right, you have fire.
That would be clockwise.
Clockwise. Counterclockwise, no more fire. Although we live in Australia, so maybe it's different there.
And then someone said...
give up? Did somebody say that?
Oh, natural gas fittings are the reverse thread, so that
explains all right, that's why.
Try eBay.
Oh, I never even thought about that.
Really? You go to eBay for everything toys?
Well, I didn't know they had useful things on eBay. Well, I guess they do.
They do.
I just thought it was crazy stuff. All right, maybe I'll look on there.
It's just, you know, it's life.
Yeah. All right. Easy to fix, right?
Yep.
It's easy to fix. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Steve has the news for you. And then I'm sure you're aware of the militia story that's been going on.
In Oregon?
Yeah.
Oregon State?
It's insane what's going on over there.
I need to find out more about it.
Alex Stone from ABC News will join us and give us everything we need to know. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and some things are happening right here in our own country from our own countrymen, and we are going to talk to ABC News correspondent Alex Stone, who's going to put some things into perspective. You have Donald Trump who's saying, you know, we have to keep people out from different religions, but a lot of crazy stuff can happen on our own turf. Alex, what is going on in Oregon?
Well, and everybody's trying to figure out exactly what this group wants, and we just got an update from them, but there is a group of militia members, along with the family of Cliven Bundy, remember him from the 2014 standoff with the federal government over grazing rights in Nevada, and they are occupying federal land in Oregon, a national wildlife refuge, the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge, and up until now, they really haven't been able to explain what it is they want. First of all, they have now decided that they have a name. They're calling themselves Citizens for Constitutional Freedom, and they're angry about a number of different constitutional issues, but mainly, and the one they're really hanging their hat on, is two ranchers who today are reporting to prison in California, federal prison, on arson charges. It's disputed where they started fires that they claim were for clearing out land and wildfire mitigation. And then the fire spread to federal land. They say that they started it on their own land. Federal government says it was on federal land, but arson charges that carry 5 years in prison as a sentence. Well, they're dealing with that now. These folks who are occupying the land say that that is absurd, that you clear your land and you end up in prison for 5 years, and that they are now occupying the land in Oregon at the National Wildlife Refuge. They say that the federal government has no constitutional right to that land and that the government needs to give it up. They want an evidentiary board set up to look into the case of the farmers. The Hammonds are their names, Dwight and Stephen Hammond. All kinds of different things that they are now demanding.
So I really don't understand this at all, Alex. You have this guy, Cliven Bundy, and some of his sons. Do they want the right to bear arms? Do they want the right to start fires? Do they want the right to have wildlife? I don't really get where they're going.
I laugh only because they really can't explain any of this. So this is all a very good question of what they want. And when they came out and spoke to reporters a short time ago, they tried to clarify it, saying this is our message. It's all constitutional messages, reading from the Constitution. These are militia members who feel that the government is taking away their rights and taking away their land, and they are fighting for it. Interesting, though, the ranchers who they are fighting for don't want their help. They are saying that, no, thank you. We uphold the right of law. We were sentenced to prison. We may not agree with it, but we're going to prison. Their five-year prison term. So they're saying, look, we have nothing to do with these militia members, yet the militia members are saying they are out there defending these two ranchers and that's why they're there. This is a very rural area in the middle of absolutely nowhere in southeastern Oregon, and right now law enforcement is just kind of saying, hey, you know what? Let them be. Let them do their thing. They're out playing with their guns, essentially, in the middle of nowhere. They're not harming the public right now. There are no federal employees who are at risk. And instead of creating a confrontation like was seen in Nevada with Cliven Bundy, like was seen in Waco, obviously a cult situation different, but going into these folks who are holed up in a location, they're choosing not to do that right now, and they're saying they're just going to let them be.
Alex, another thing, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but when planning a standoff, especially one of this magnitude, and you're adamant that we're not going to move until we get what we want, you really need to establish exactly what it is you want when doing that, right? Or it waters the whole process down.
Well, it would seem that that would probably work the best, but they moved in angry over the ranchers and then built from there, and now they have put out the call for militia members to respond. So now you've got militia members from across the country who are showing up to defend these ranchers who don't really want to be defended and fighting for constitutional rights and what they claim their rights are. The folks in town will tell you that nobody from town is taking part in this. Nobody who is really from the area is taking part. They did in a peaceful protest before all this started on Saturday, and then now it's folks from Arizona and from Nevada and a lot of different, mainly Western states,
yeah,
going in their camouflage with their weapons and going into this land. Our crews were actually allowed in yesterday. The militia members allowed our crews in. They have a roadblock set up that they're now manning. They've got a tower that's used as a wildfire lookout tower. Now they're manning that as a security tower with their weapons. And there are signs all over town if you go outside of the refuge area that say, militia, go home, and we don't
right.
want you here. So a very different view in the city.
So what will be the tolerance for this? At what point does the government say, okay, we understand what your rights are, but at this point it's getting dangerous? Where does that start to become a little bit dangerous?
You know, hard to say because we don't really know what that dangerous position is, because the only people out in this area of the wildlife refuge, it's the militia members and the media right now. And that's about it. And it's many miles down a road outside of any sort of populated area. So except for a building that they have now occupied that nobody was in when they occupied it, they pretty much opened the door and went in, and
yeah.
now they're claiming that land, there's really nothing more to it. And in fact, it really hadn't been occupied by federal workers in quite some time. So it's really an area that the police and the FBI are saying, you know what, if they want to go out there for a while, that's fine.
You know, the media should just leave, and then no one reports on this, and then they're sitting there scratching their heads going, now what do we do?
Yeah.
We should have been more specific.
Yeah, no, they are very media savvy. Ammon Bundy, the son of Cliven, he has constantly been speaking to reporters, and he was on all the morning shows live this morning. He knows the media machine that he needs to feed, and that's been giving them this publicity, and that's been giving them the support from more of the militia members who have been showing up from states saying, hey, I want to help out too, and I want to take part. They have claimed, though, that if the government tries to come in, that they will fight them and fight to the death until they get something of what they want, whatever that is. One, they want the land handed back over that they're on and a number of other things. But at this point, it doesn't look like the government's willing to do that. By the way, President Obama today saying that he believes that this is a local issue and something that, even though the FBI is in charge of it, that is not on the radar of needing. In fact, I can grab the statement real fast here, so real fast, so I don't.
All right.
Here it is from the White House today. This ultimately is a local law enforcement matter. The FBI is monitoring the situation and offering support to local law enforcement officials. We're hopeful that the situation can be resolved peacefully without any violence. So he's saying it's local, and it's something that they're dealing with in the area of Oregon.
I know it's local for the most part, but as you mentioned, there's people from other states now joining forces, so that becomes an almost a national issue, doesn't it?
Well, sure, and the fact that you have the FBI taking the lead on this now, and the FBI has set up a joint command center quite a ways away. Law enforcement, local police say they have no interest in going out and watching these guys and monitoring them at all. The FBI will only say that they are monitoring them, but there is no sign of law enforcement. If you drive around the area, you don't see them anywhere. They're not scoping out like you would see in Waco or
right.
like you've seen anywhere else. Even in Nevada during the Cliven Bundy situation down there, there were still sheriff's deputies all over the place watching what was going on. None of that is happening right now in Oregon.
And no danger. I mean, no one's been injured or killed.
No, absolutely nothing. It's really a lot of guys in camouflage with weapons watching over a chunk of land, but nobody's been injured. Nobody's been killed. They didn't take it with force at all. They pretty much just walked on the land and said, this is now ours.
And it's a wildlife refuge, but these Bundys claim it belongs to the people. So I still don't understand.
You don't get
this.
The discrepancy there?
No.
Right. Well, they say that that the buildings are there so they can occupy them as they want, and they want the federal government to give the land back to the people, back to the ranchers who they claim lost the land over many years as the government came in and made it a wildlife refuge. But they're still very much against everything that happened to the Hammonds, those ranchers. And when it comes down to the arson charges that they were found guilty of and now going to prison, they say that all of that is ridiculous, and they want that taken care of as well. They claim it was an unjust trial against the Hammonds.
Remind me, Alex, because I seem to remember with the Hammonds, they were given one sentence for jail, and then didn't another judge overrule that and say that's not enough time?
It was appealed, and the court said that that the minimum sentence was not met. The minimum sentence was 5 years in prison.
Yeah.
The original judge essentially said this is ridiculous, that whatever they were doing on either it be their land or on BLM land, but BLM land that they had grazing rights to, that they were clearing, or there are some claims that they were trying to cover up poaching, but what they were doing didn't deserve 5 years in prison, according to the first judge. Then an appellate court came in and said, oh, yeah, there is a minimum sentence here of 5 years, so they have to go back to prison.
Oh, all right.
Well, it's pretty interesting that it seems like just a misplanned takeover.
Standoff, yeah.
Well, and, you know, at this point, we can't even, it has been called a standoff, but we can't even call it that anymore because police are saying, we're not going to engage with them at all.
Right.
And Ammon Bundy said today he hasn't talked to police or law enforcement at all, that through affiliates, he says, they have sent messages saying we're not going to approach you guys and we're just going to leave you be.
So you can only play
a standoff if you don't have the other side taking part.
You can only play tug of war if both teams agree to grab the rope, right? And only one team
right.
is grabbing
well,
you've the
rope. You've only got one side tugging on the rope right now.
All right.
This is like the worst reality series ever.
Yes.
It's oh, we didn't think that through.
It's terrible.
Well, I'm glad there's no one injured and no reports of gunfire at this point. And
yeah, no nothing. And they say that they will continue to hold this land for years if they have to.
Years. All right.
Years.
Will you call us every day with an update?
We'll check
we would
back
like to
with
check
you.
In every day.
Yeah. Can't wait for a month from now.
Yep, they're still there. Thanks,
Alex.
We appreciate it. It's Alex Stone from ABC News.
He's awesome. And it's really just confusing for me.
Well, it doesn't have all the earmarks of a traditional standoff. They demand to get what they want, but they wouldn't say what they wanted.
They want the land.
They want
the
land.
For the people. But the people don't seem to want it. These belong to the ranchers who set a fire, and they're in jail.
Right. And they're going on their own accord. They go, no, we understand. We did something wrong, and now we're going to pay the price.
So now these guys, the Bundys, are squatting on the Hammonds' land.
Yep.
And they're saying, you know, okay, we want the land back to the people, but really they're not giving it to the people. They're keeping it for their own militia.
That's what it is.
I've solved the problem.
Problem solved.
All right.
Well done.
Thank
Very nicely
you.
Done. All right.
Makes no sense.
You're like Russ Ewing. You just came in and solved it.
It was all a dream.
We'll be back in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Can I gloat for a minute? Do we have a moment for me to gloat? A gloating moment?
Sure.
On the first
day.
Are
you a braggart?
Well, it's funny you say that. Is Steve Bertrand available, or has he already gone home?
He's gone.
Has he gone home already?
I proved him wrong.
Do you want to tell your braggart story about Steve first? You can, because this would be a great time to.
Well, I am not, you know, sometimes the brightest bulb in the fluorescent display.
All right.
Okay, I'm not an idiot, but sometimes I say stupid things.
We all do.
I sometimes don't think before I talk, and I was talking to Steve Bertrand off the air, and I said, oh, you're gloating about something, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, shall remain off the air,
mm-hmm.
and I said, boy, you're such a braggart.
Right.
And he said, oh, it's actually a braggard with a D.
I think it's braggart.
And
I'm
I came
sure.
in and asked you, the, you know, Wizard of Wisdom.
Yeah, I'm the Wizard of Wisdom. That's what I am.
I said, Bill, I need to throw some vernacular your way. And
is
I
it
said,
braggart or is it braggart? I said braggart, like you said.
Yeah, and I looked it up and it's braggart.
It is. I know it is.
And Steve Bertrand is much smarter than
He's
both
very
of us
well
together.
Read. He's read a bunch of books.
Doesn't help him, evidently.
I guess not.
So that's why I asked if you were
common
a braggart.
Mistake. It's a common mistake.
He's not here to defend himself. That's his deal.
Here's my moment of gloating, and then we'll go about our merry way. On the day after the Bears' first game, I said to you and to little Kevin in the producer's booth and to anyone who would listen, don't waste your time on the Chicago Bears. They're an awful football team filled with nothing but embarrassment to the city, to this country, to the planet. Don't watch
you
them.
You weren't that filled
don't
with
listen
vitriol.
To them. Don't wear any Bears paraphernalia. If you see Jay Cutler, just like do that thing where you take your thumb and your middle finger and just tweak him in the side of the head because he deserves it. Don't do anything with
but listen
the Bears.
To OB and Hampton.
Always listen to them because those guys make
because,
it fun.
Yeah, it's the only fun part about
but
it.
But I said don't waste 3 hours every Sunday watching this team. It'll do nothing but frustrate you and give you a heart attack. And now that the season is over.
It's over?
It was over that first day.
Did they lose yesterday?
Oh, yeah.
Let me guess. Did Cutler throw an interception?
No, he did not throw a interception.
Did he throw 10?
He threw 3 interceptions.
His first in, I don't know, like many games?
Always at key moments in the game. Always at key moments when they needed to move the ball forward.
I'm just saying, in order to appreciate the good times, if and when they do come.
They're not going
to
happen.
You have to go through these rough times.
And I really
like seeing it all come together. You know, this is John Fox's first year, so hopefully in a few years they're a successful team and I can say, hey, I saw the beginning of all this.
Like the Cubs.
It's different with the Cubs because the Cubs had some sort of a plan in place where they said, we're going to have 5 years that are just not pretty. The next 4 or 5 years are not going to be good. And they stuck up to that. They were not good. They were awful. They were terrible. But they
so had the Bears just said, the next five years are going to suck. But
right.
After that, we're on the right
then
track.
But they don't have anything in place for the future. I mean, they really don't. They just keep making the same mistakes. They keep hiring the same bad people. They have the same. They're about to lose Matt Forte, who in the history of the Bears, I put him. Kevin, you tell me, because you're at this point a way bigger Bears fan than I am. Wouldn't you say Matt Forte in the history of the Bears organization is one of their 10 best players of all time?
In the history, I mean, he's definitely up there.
He's way up there.
I hope he's back next year.
I think he's done with the Bears. If you were him, I would never sign with the Bears again.
I think he wants to.
He wants to, but they don't want him, it's appearing. Oh.
We'll see. We'll see.
Why would they want a guy who's good? Who needs that on your roster?
Yeah, who does need that? They're going to wreck everything.
That's unnecessary.
And how many years are we stuck with Cutler?
It's infinity. They signed him to an infinity deal where he's going to always be the quarterback of the Bears. Always. Even his kid at some point will take over. One of his kids will just take over the reins. But what an embarrassing team on a weekly basis. They lost it. It was a battle for last place. That's what it came to yesterday between the Bears and the Lions.
If you're going to lose,
which
lose
team is
big.
The worst?
Go the worst or go home.
Oh.
Isn't that the saying?
People, it's a version of that. It's a version of that. But it's just so, I mean, really. And I'll make my decision in the next 10 days as to next year. Because I don't think I'm going
to
watch. I'm going
to
do the same
watch.
Thing. I'm going to watch the first game. And I think my assessment of the team was pretty fair. Everything I told you about the team was true.
You still snuck in a few peaks.
I didn't watch after the first game. I didn't watch another whole quarter after the first game. I just couldn't do it. Like yesterday, I watched maybe a total of 11 or 12 minutes, and every time I turned it on, he threw an interception. Every time.
You missed some good naps. That is the perfect time on a Sunday. Because Jim would always make. He's like, "Come down and watch the Bears with me." I'm like, "I'm not." Bill told me not to watch the Bears.
You shouldn't do that.
He's like, "The heck with Bill. Come and watch the Bears." Kevin was proud of Jim for that. Come and watch the Bears. So I did, and then 2 minutes later, I'd hear.
Yeah.
And Jim sleeping during the game.
Take a nap. Well, the Bears were taking a nap. Why didn't everyone should take a nap during the Bears game? It's just so embarrassing to watch that team. And Jake, here's what the killer is. Jay Cutler has the ability to be a really good quarterback. He just can't figure out how.
Next year.
Is it next year? Is that the year he's going to finally figure out how?
Hey, just for reference, just so you know.
On paper,
Jay Cutler
he
is
looks
tied,
good.
Yeah, he's in the middle of the pack for interceptions this year.
Just so you know, the Bears have made the playoffs one time the whole time he's been the quarterback
of
the team.
But my point being, Ben Roethlisberger's had more than him. Jameis Winston, Sam
really?
Bradford. Oh, yeah, Philip Rivers, Matt Stafford.
Every one of those
Andrew
guys.
Luck, all these guys.
Yep.
Drew Brees.
Yep. And the list goes on and on and on and on. Guys you've never heard of have had more playoff years than he has.
No, I was saying
oh, more interceptions.
That was this year.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, I know, but that's all well and good. But the bottom line is, did they make it to the playoffs or not? No, they went 6-10. That's not good.
Are you going to make it to the tennis playoffs again?
I'm not eligible because I got bumped up.
What does that mean?
That means I've been playing at one level at 3.5, and I got bumped up to 4.0, and I'm
You're
not
like
eligible.
You're like Tosh 4.0.
I'm similar to Tosh 4.0.
All right. Yeah. So you're never going to go to the playoffs again?
I don't know. I'm in this weird stratosphere of pro-type players. I don't know if I'll be in again. I don't know.
Well, that's a great attitude, Maybe. Jay Cutler Jr.
Maybe. But look at the amount of money he's paid to not do well. Doesn't that crush
you're
you?
You're not paying him?
If I was a season ticket holder, I would be paying him. But look at how much money he's making to fail.
Okay, Bill,
it's
really?
It's not just on him, though.
They're all making money to fail. Yeah.
Think about, I mean, you look at the receivers he had yesterday. I mean, just they had no receivers
right.
yesterday.
At one point, they were calling out seat numbers, and if they called your number, you were allowed to play for a quarter.
I thought it was you'd win the split the pot, but no, you had to go out there and play?
You had to play either wide receiver or running back for one quarter.
God, I wish I would have gone to that game.
There was this lady from Glen Ellen who got, what'd she get, 62 yards in a quarter? That was pretty good. That was fun to watch.
You'll be back, because that's all we have
I'm going to give them... I will give them one more game next year. I'll watch that first game.
They don't
game,
care.
But if they don't care.
What do they care? Oh, Bill Left's not watching
Jay Cutler,
any of our games.
I saw
Everybody
at the end of the game,
is.
Jay Cutler goes over and he's talking to the guys on the Lions and he's laughing it up. And I'm like, what are you laughing about? You just
the season's
you gave
over.
Us a 6-10 year. Why is that funny? Why he was out there, he's having a big laugh
You're
and
just
stuff
jealous
like that.
Of
there was also
looks.
A moment he was fired up on the sideline. After
I didn't see that.
He got hit as he was throwing.
Oh, I did see that. I did see the clip. I saw a clip of that. Some guy in the Lions kept it. He was down on the ground, and the guy just kept him down on the ground. And I'm like, stay down on the ground. Why get back up? There's no point in even getting back up.
You're filled with vitriol about the Bears, and I got sucked into it at the beginning of the season. And then I watched some games, and it's like, you know
but
what?
But did you get any enjoyment at all out of watching
I
them?
I never do. I'm pretty much all the Blackhawks. That's all I care about.
That's what you want to do.
That's all I
That's
care about
do-
now.
Good.
But the
That's
Bears
better.
Is a nice soundtrack to a Sunday afternoon, and... It's good for eating chili.
I don't know how Ed Obradovich, seriously, I don't know how he does not just explode. Because I hear him here on the station after the games.
Oh, he's so
and
mad.
And he's as mad as I am, but he puts it into such better words.
Yeah, but he has a reason to be mad. He used to play.
Well, I know.
You're just sitting there, you know, armchair quarterback.
I know.
I could get this recliner going farther than you could, Cutler.
That's right. I could. All right. A quick break, and then we'll find out what's coming up on Roe's show. We'll talk to Roe and Ann in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.